were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, prison doors swung open.
$1 per ounce. If you'd like to find out more about Nova Gold, then log on to their website at www.novagold.net or check them out on the American Stock Exchange, symbol NG.
This is the Global American Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Two more American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, bringing the total death toll for the U.S. military this month to 103. Since the Iraq War began, at least 2,816 American soldiers have been killed. In Washington, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said that he may approve a joint U.S.-Iraqi plan to increase Iraqi security forces. Rumsfeld did not specify the size of the increase, but it could be up to 100,000 new troops, according to CBS television. There are currently 150,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. In Baghdad today, 11 people were killed when a suicide bomber struck a Shiite wedding party. 21 others, including several children, were wounded. And in Sadr City, 3 people were killed and 5 others were wounded in a car bombing today. Police say a car bombing yesterday in Sadr City killed 33 people. According to the Associated Press, 1,170 Iraqi civilians have died in the war this month alone. In Pakistan, in response to the air raid that killed 80 people yesterday at a religious school that was often visited by al-Qaeda leaders, thousands of pro-Taliban tribesmen held a rally and threatened revenge. 20,000 people took part in that demonstration, which was one of several across Pakistan to denounce the raid. A Pakistani official, speaking on condition of anonymity, told ABC News that the attack was launched after intelligence reports suggested incorrectly that al-Qaeda's second-in-command may have been visiting the school. After pulling out 11 months ago, North Korea will return to six-party talks about its nuclear program, according to American, South Korean, and Chinese officials. The talks are expected to resume in November or December. President Bush said that he is very pleased with the news. However, U.S. Ambassador John Bolton said that this return to talks was not enough to lift the U.N. sanctions imposed after North Korea's recent nuclear test. The National Journal reports an increase in the number of bloggers who are being paid by Democratic and Republican campaigns to write in favor of their candidates. Some bloggers are being paid several thousand dollars a month for their services. In Greece today, at the first ever UN Global Internet Forum, a human rights group criticized Western companies for providing the Chinese with technology that limits freedom of expression on the Chinese Internet. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Reuters News Service reports that a diving crew in North Carolina has found what they believe to be Blackbeard's pirate ship. The ship was lost in 1718 and has been the subject of treasure hunting expeditions for centuries. Divers have recovered cannons, a ship's bell, gold dust, and other items that may help them link the ship to Blackbeard. Scottish researchers have discovered the first gene linked to schizophrenia. In a study of 200 people, researchers found that abnormal brain activity and a specific genetic mutation were associated with schizophrenia. Mental health professionals hope that this discovery may lead to effective treatments for the disease. Microsoft is suing 55 online dealers in 10 countries who sell counterfeit Microsoft software on sites such as eBay. Microsoft contends that counterfeit software is often infected with viruses and spyware and makes identity theft easier. In another blow to Sony this month, the U.S. Justice Department has launched an antitrust probe into the company's sales of its static random access memory chips. Sony's quarterly profit had already fallen 94% due to its recall of millions of lithium batteries and low video game sales. Lightsweet crude is trading at $58.62 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones closed down 6 points at 12,081, the NASDAQ was up 3 at 2367, and the S&P 500 was flat at 1378. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm
AmeriMergent Health.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy! Or should I say, well, howdy, blah. I'm Bob. Happy Halloween. Happy Samhain. Igor, help me with the bags.
All right, you take the blonde and I'll take the one with the toy bin.
Okay, so it is Halloween, and you know, I am told that this was the period marked as the beginning of the new year by my Celtic ancestors. And I can't help reflecting on the fact that it's when you get down to the Druids and the Celts and things like that. I can't blame the early church for this one because among other people, Julius Caesar marched through and slaughtered every Druid he could lay his hands on because they thought my people a little bit odd, strange, you know, painting themselves blue, going into battle naked with pitch and tar in their hair and lighting their own hair on fire and screaming and running. You know, we had the mob mentality down pat early on. If we'd had a little bit of military discipline, we really might have dealt differently with Julius Caesar and several others. And several did, the Germanic tribes handed a butt-whipping to successive Roman armies. But that's my culture. That's my culture that was taken away from us eons ago, and we had it replaced with an entirely different cultural paradigm. So I have no idea what the religious practices of my forebears were up until Roman Catholicism, and then Calvinism got a hold of it. And Calvinism doesn't bring out the best in the Scots character. At least, not by my lights. But this is, I suppose this would be a high holy day for my forebears, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 years ago. So, happy Celtic New Year? Is that what this is? Okay. But I thought we'd have a little fun with things tonight. A little reading here, a little reading there. And I don't have any Edgar Allan Poe for you. I don't have any H.P. Lovecraft. I don't have any Stephen King. I went in a different direction. Sorry, Halloween. Little chaos in the studio. But anyway. So I do have something for you. To wit. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was the night that on the marge of Lake Lebarge I cremated Sam McGee. Now Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the South to roam round the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell, though he'd often say in his homely way that he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold! Through the parka's fold, it stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes we'd closed, then the lashes froze, till sometimes we couldn't see. It wasn't much fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed and the stars overhead were dancing heel and toe, he turned to me and, "Cap," says he, "I'll cash in this trip, I guess, and if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request." Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no. Then he says with a sort of moan, "It's the cursed cold, and it's got right hold till I'm chilled clean through to the bone. Yet 'tain't being dead, it's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains. So I want you to swear that foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains." A pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh, and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee. And before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left of Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brawn and brains, but you promised true, and it's up to you to cremate these last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were dumb, in my heart how I cursed that load. In the long, long night, by the lone firelight, while the huskies round in a ring, howled out their woes to the homeless snows. Oh, God, how I loathed the thing! And every day that quiet clay seemed to heavy and heavier grow. And on I went, though the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad, and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in, and I'd often sing to the hateful thing, and it hearkened with a grin. Till I came to the marge of Lake Lebarge, and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, but I saw in a trice it was called the Alice May. And I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. Then, "Here," said I with a sudden cry, "is my crematorium." Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. Some coal I found that was lying around, and I heaped the fuel higher. The flames just soared, and the furnace roared, such a blaze you seldom see, and I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal, and I stuffed in Sam McGee. Then I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why, and the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out, and they danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked." Then the door I opened wide. And there sat Sam, looking cool and calm, in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile, and he said, "Please close that door. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let the in the cold and storm. Since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm." There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake Lebarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Robert W. Service. A chestnut, if ever there was one, but a little something out of the ordinary, and I've got a couple of other ones out of the ordinary. We'll do one maybe at the top of each hour. Now, that was fun. But, you know, there's that old joke about the guy who dies and goes to hell. And the devil is leading him around and giving him a choice of torment. And in the first instance, he opens a door and he shows the damned soul into a room that's a hard concrete floor. And everyone in there is spending all eternity standing on their heads on that concrete floor, and the moaning is terrible, and the agony, and the wailing. And the devil looks at the guy and says, is this what you want? There's another room. Is this what you want? The guy's looking, and the damned soul's eyeballs are bugged out, and they're all red and purple in the face from standing on there. I mean, there's presidents and cardinals and popes and all manner of, you know, Genghis Khan standing, and everybody just miserable. And he goes, "I don't want to be in here." He goes, "Okay." The devil goes, "Okay, we'll go to the other room." And they open the door. And in the next room is a room that is absolutely knee-deep in poop. But in this room, all the people, popes and cardinals and presidents and kings and queens and princes and murderers and cutthroats and cutpurses and rapists, father stabbers and mother rapers, they're all there and they're standing knee-deep in poop drinking coffee. And the guy looks at him, obviously this is the better deal. So he says, "I'll take this one." So he wades into the nasty room, and it's pretty foul and stinking. But he's standing there, and he gets his first cup of coffee, standing there, saucer in his left hand, little demi-tasse coffee cup in his right. And just as he raises the coffee cup to his lips for the first sip, a little demon walks in and says, "All right, coffee break's over. Back on your heads." Well, that's kind of where we are right now. Fun's over. Coffee break's over. Back on your heads. Because we got, there's some sick crap out there tonight. And, you know, I guess it doesn't take much of a prophet to say that Republicans being Republicans and rattlesnakes being rattlesnakes, they're going to do what Republicans do and what rattlesnakes do, and that these last 7 days, now I guess we would officially say that it's closer to six and change before the election, are going to be sleazy, 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 sleazy. Nasty. What do I mean? Well, there's the John Kerry thing. You know, yesterday, John Kerry's in Los Angeles, and he tries to tell a joke. Memo to John Kerry, leave the jokes to the professionals. You be a senator. And he winds up saying that if you don't study hard in school, you wind up in Iraq. And Lord God, Billy Bob, the White House jumped on that like ducks on June bugs. And Tony Snow's out there, sleazy and smarmy, and he's saying things like, well, you know, John Kerry has a habit of disrespecting the troops. John Kerry obviously doesn't care much about the troops. John Kerry constantly insults our fighting men and women. I think John Kerry owes an apology to the fighting men and women who are defending our freedom in Iraq. Now, of course, anybody in their right mind knows that that's not what John Kerry was talking about. He blew the joke. I knew a young woman one time. Okay, here's the story. String walks into a bar. And he looks at the bartender and he says, give me a beer. Bartender says, hey, we don't serve string in here. Get out. So the string, dejected and still very much wanting a beer, leaves the bar, walks down the sidewalk, and he sees a guy selling, you know, a guy selling combs on the sidewalk. And so he flips the guy a quarter, takes the string, reaches up to the, takes the comb, reaches up to the top of the string, and teases it out. Till it's all fluffy at the top of the string. And then he loops himself around and comes back under and goes through the loop and pulls himself tight. And turns around, goes back up the street, walks in the bar. And says, I'll have a beer. And the bartender says, hey, aren't you that string I just threw out of here a little bit ago? And the string looks at the bartender and goes, no. I'm afraid not. I know. It's terrible. But there's a point to this. I knew a young woman many years ago, and we were sitting at a... And I had told this little joke, this little chestnut, this really bad little pun, in front of her. And she thought it was the funniest thing she had ever heard in her life. I mean, she cackled like she was good, like a hen getting ready to lay an egg. And so we're sitting at lunch with some other people. And she looks over and goes, hey, Bob. Yeah? Tell the afraid not joke. John Kerry is that young woman. You know, a sense of humor that doesn't register on any scientific. It's just, it's so low, it's immeasurable. You know, biggest pratfall. You could sit down with John Kerry and watch A Night at the Opera with the Marx Brothers, among the funniest films ever made. And, you know, during the really funny parts, John might go, ah. Now, I'm not trying to be too hard on John Kerry, but he had a point to make. And don't try to make it with humor. You can't tell jokes about people, 100 of whom have been slaughtered because George Bush is a lying, miserable, failure, incompetent boob. It's not going to work. It's like telling a 9/11 joke. There aren't any. It's like a Timothy McVeigh joke. There aren't any Timothy McVeigh jokes either. John Kerry wasn't slurring the troops. John Kerry was making a very, very simple point that became a little too complicated. And it was a George Bush joke. You know, it's like saying, how many Republicans does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the answer is, what, they're screwing the light bulbs now? Some people can do that, others can't. John Kerry needs to talk about policy and give long-winded speeches. And now, since Tony Snow came out and just really, really rubbed his nose in it, John Kerry came out today and just delivered this beautiful, and I do mean beautiful, jeremiad against the Republican Party. Well, I'll have it here in front of me in just a second. But he turned, you know, he took what Tony Snow said, turned it sideways, and jammed it up Tony Snow's nether regions, and good for him for doing it. And every time John Kerry does something like that, I am filled with a profound sense of wistfulness. Because, yeah, I do remember when he didn't do this in 2004. I remember when he was sailboarding off of Martha's Vineyard. I remember the photographs of John Kerry in the sperm suit. And I wish to God he had... But here's what he said. This is a quote. If anyone thinks a veteran would criticize the more than 140,000 heroes serving in Iraq and not the president who got us stuck there, they're crazy. I'm not going to be lectured by a stuffed suit White House mouthpiece standing behind a podium, or doughy Rush Limbaugh, who no doubt today will take a break from belittling Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease to start lying about me just as they have lied about Iraq. Good on you, John Kerry. Good to see you figured out the fighting spirit. But can I ask a hard question? Is John Kerry up for re-election? Maybe he is. One of you Massachusetts people can help. Is John Kerry up for re-election? What the hell's he doing campaigning in Los Angeles? Now, I'm not trying to be a jerk about this. But we had Flush Flimball on the ropes. We had him in a position where he couldn't open his mouth. Yeah, well, the last time he opened his mouth, if you've been following it, you know, his last complaint, my friends, they speeded up the camera on me to make my movements on camera look like I was shaking more than I was in talking about Michael J. Fox. No, they didn't. You're not speeding anything up when you go watch it on YouTube or elsewhere. It's there. And he's straight out of that old line from Clement Moore's poem, you know, and when he laughed, he shook like a bowl full of jelly. Yeah, that's Rush Limbaugh. And it didn't have to be slowed down or speeded up. It was disgusting. And we had him in a box for the next damn week. Guess what? Flush Flimball's not in the box anymore because, unfortunately, John Kerry let him out. Now, you can take issue with me, and that's fine. I'm not trying to give John Kerry a hard time. But I know how these thugs, these monsters, these unmitigated bastards operate. And you know what? It's not going to go away in a day. It's not going to go away in 2 days. Do you remember when Dick Durbin, senator from Illinois, made a perfectly reasonable comment that some of the horrors that we were hearing about in Iraq, if you didn't know they were being done by American soldiers, you'd swear it was the Russians or the Nazis? And they... Ooh! 2 weeks! When is Senator Durbin going to apologize for slurring our troops? And eventually... He apologized. Senator Durbin did. And now if you go over to MSNBC, there's a poll there that says basically, was John Kerry wrong for what he said, or was he really, 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 really wrong? And why does John Kerry hate our troops? God. You know, I mean, look, it's my foot. I'm going to shoot it. Let's go to the phones. Ben is with us. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, you know why they don't tell Jonestown jokes anymore?
Why's that?
The punchlines are too long.
Boom, boom. Oh, 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 that was restaurant quality. Yeah, that's like why they took Mark Foley's Library of Congress card away.
He kept turning over pages?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus. But, I mean, is this... Am I off base with Kerry on this?
Maybe just a little. Because, you know, right now the Republicans are so damn desperate, they are looking for anything. They have been sitting there waiting for somebody to mispronounce a word or stutter or say that George Bush is a jerk or any one of a number of other things that they could use. And they just happened to catch Kerry.
Well, did they just happen to catch him, or did he put him out, put himself kind of out there? And I mean, I'm not,
it's like the Dean scream. It was totally out of context.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
Anyone who heard the whole thing would have understood what it was.
Well, yeah, and the kids in the audience that he was talking, they laughed.
Yeah, they got it. It was a total. You can, you know, I can find 10 words that any politician says in a row that would make them sound like the worst thing since Attila the Hun, okay, if you take them out of context. And that is exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing things taken out of context. I heard a radio ad today slurring a friend of mine who's running for state senate here saying that he supports marijuana legalization. Well, you know, I know his position on this pretty well. And it ain't legalization he's supporting. He's supporting decriminalization for first offenses, and that is a very different thing.
Well, it certainly is.
Okay? Very, very different. You know, treat it as a status violation and a first offense and give a fine. And the reason for this is because, well, he's a lawyer, and he knows what it costs the state. He knows intimately what it costs the state to prosecute somebody for a gram of marijuana. And it ain't worth it.
No.
It's over $18,000 to do that prosecution. And then if there's jail time, okay, and the fine never matches that. And then if there's jail time, you know, we're talking $3,000 a week to keep somebody in the Illinois penitentiary.
Jesus. You know, but how do you explain that in a 30-second radio commercial?
Exactly right. So you take things. The Republicans are great at this. They take out of context. They distort. They lie. You know, there's a number of different ways you can tell a lie. You know, there's like this whole series of, you know, lies of omission, lies of commission. You know, a whole series of ways you can lie and commit logical fallacies in speech that, you know, were actually, you know, St. Augustine laid them all out in great detail at one point so that, you know, they could be, you know, carefully understood by people who were going to be, you know, speaking and debating so that you'd know when you were confronted with such a lie and how to deal with it. And Republicans are masters of every single one of those.
Yeah, they work at it.
They work. Yeah, it's
they don't take years off, Ben. They don't take days off. There is a machine that goes nonstop, 36 hours a day, 12 days a week, every day of the blessed year.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's what makes him makes this thing with Kerry. He's already been swift boated.
Right.
Surely to God he knew that coming out right now and trying to take on George Bush with a little one-liner dig. In football parlance, it's not a high percentage play.
No, it wasn't, and it was a tactical error on his part. But you know, John Kerry, you know, it does not represent the Democratic Party. John Kerry represents John Kerry.
And
arguably, John Kerry represents the people of the state of Massachusetts and John Kerry. But John Kerry doesn't represent me. John Kerry doesn't represent you. John Kerry doesn't represent, you know, Tammy Duckworth running here in Illinois, who they're lying about.
Boy, they jumped on that in a hurry, though. Did you hear Tony Snow saying, well, you know, we need to ask Tammy Duckworth if she agrees with John Kerry's position? You know, this is all, I mean, and the shame of it all, Ben, is this comes out of an old Democratic playbook, truth be told. I mean, you know the old story about LBJ, right?
Oh, yeah, I just want to hear him deny it. Exactly right.
And now we're running around denying it.
Well, you know, we need to turn it around, and I really think, I want to hear somebody ask Dennis Hastert. I want to hear somebody ask Dennis Hastert on TV with the cameras rolling the following question. Mr. Hastert, what do you say to allegations that you had inappropriate conduct with students when you were a high school wrestling coach in 1978?
I just want to hear him deny it.
Point is, that one might have been true.
Well, yeah, it may have been.
But, yeah, I just want to hear
him. And it was in a parochial.
And it's a legitimate question because it's the reason he lost his very first race here for Illinois State Legislature. He lost because of those allegations. And
exactly.
They were never addressed.
Well, you know, there's some of this. We're seeing some interesting poll numbers come out. The Rasmussen poll came out today that said Jim Webb is now 4 points ahead of George Allen. You know, George Allen, who had his people mug, Mike Stark from callingallwingnuts.com. He went down to an appearance. Have you seen this?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, he asks him. It
was assault and battery.
Yeah, why did you spit on your wife? And the Allen thugs just tackled him. I guess they weren't going to have make it possible for George to say anything and create another macaca moment.
Well, what they did was assault and battery, and they ought to be prosecuted.
Yeah, they should be.
I really think there ought to be some jail time for this.
I mean, I've seen the video. I'm sure you have too. It's a hell of a thing. Kind of makes me wish we were doing TV.
I could go into a courtroom and convict with that video.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think there is a single prosecutor in the land who is so inept that he could not get a conviction for assault and battery on the basis of that video alone. The only thing you could ever hope for if you were a defense lawyer in that case would be to rule the video out.
That would be your only hope. You know, and that's what's frustrating. We got that. Not that's buried. Because we're talking about, you know, because the mainstream media wants to talk about John Kerry. Have you seen this MSNBC poll yet, Ben?
I don't visit that site because I can't afford to replace the screen on this computer.
You mean when you have to go get the Elvis gun?
Yeah.
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 I know. Well, were John Kerry's remarks appropriate? Yes. Soldiers are stupid. No. He shouldn't have said it, and it was taken out of context. And yes, and there are people actually voting yes, soldiers are stupid.
No, they're not.
I mean, the media has gotten hold of this, and you know I'm discussing it now. Shame on me. But you know we've got the tackle today. What else is out there? Jim Talent going into Southern Missouri trying to stir up the snake handlers.
I will say this, in the defense of the people who say, yes, soldiers are stupid, you know, if you join the military any time in the last 3 years, there really is, there's at least some doubt as to your sanity.
Yeah, but by the same token, what do you tell the kid who just got out of high school who lives in, busted knuckle Wyoming, who is either going to sit there and do nothing with no job and no way of supporting himself and no future, no college, no nothing. Or, you know, he hears the siren song of the recruiter and says, well, if I, you know, not getting killed is really the key to the benefits plan.
Yeah. Yeah, what I tell them is that benefits plan is going to be canceled as soon as this brouhaha is over. The Republicans absolutely have no intention on going through with the benefit.
Well, there's another story out there that deserves some mention, Ben, and since I've got you here on the phone for a second, I'll share it with you. We'll listen to it together. One of the other things that's getting covered up in the John Kerry fracas is Pickles-Bush's transmogrification, Halloween appropriate, into apparently Babs. She was asked about the Michael J. Fox flap. Did you see this?
No.
Oh, well, just listen, because, you know, and then have the bucket handy.
One of the issues that's come up, Michael J. Fox, the whole issue of stem cell research, your reaction to the events of the past week.
Well, I don't have any idea about any of those. I mean, I've watched on television just like you have. But the fact is, President Bush is the only president who's authorized funding for stem cell research. And, you know, it's an issue that's easy to try to manipulate people's feelings about, and I understand that. My dad died of Alzheimer's. You know, there's nothing I would like more than to think there was a cure for Alzheimer's, and especially before I get to be the age he is, but knowing also how he suffered. But, you know, it's always easy to manipulate people's feelings especially when you're talking about diseases that are so difficult.
Got that? This wasn't about a cure. This was about manipulating people's feelings. Michael J. Fox doesn't want to get cured. He just wants to manipulate people's feelings.
Yeah, Christopher Reeve didn't want to be cured either.
Yeah, that whole thing in the wheelchair, big act.
Yeah, the ventilator. Mm-hmm. Nope.
That was fake.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
you know, Ronald Reagan, he was faking the Alzheimer's.
Yeah, absolutely. Sharp as a tack till the day he died.
Absolutely. Sharp as a tack till the day he died, just so that Nancy could come out there afterwards and support stem cell research, which she did.
I mean, this is last Saturday. I mean, this is fairly new. Is anybody out there talking about what a cruel, heartless thing Laura Bush is?
Well, you know what else is I think that Rush Limbaugh is faking impotence when he goes down to Caribbean countries for those sex tours.
Oh, dude, those Viagras were taken for the little. He took those for the little boys, not for himself.
That's right. It was actually you know, him helping them. Okay. You know,
this is just sickening. It is just sickening, Ben.
And Rush Limbaugh's back problem.
Oh, yeah.
His back never hurt. This was just him manipulating his doctor's emotions so they'll give him Oxycontin.
But sadly, you know, we're talking about this the rest of the world having an orgy over John Kerry. And I caught some of the CNN coverage of it, Ben. That was enough to really bring up dinner, and I'm not even going to play it. But there, Ed Hoosis, that covers the White House part of the time when somebody else isn't there, he said, well, you know, the White House is really spoiling for a fight with John Kerry. They can't wait to get out there with John Kerry now because they're really going to mash him up.
He's not running for anything.
No, he's not.
He's not running for anything. And you know what else? You know, I really think that you know, we ought to talk about who's running from whom here. Clearly the Republican Party is running from George Bush's legacy. They're running from Dennis Hastert's legacy, and they're running from their record. They're not running on their record. They're not running on their achievement. They're not running. They're running from. They are running away from their achievements. They are running away from their legacies. They have absolutely been the worst administration and the worst Congress and the worst Senate the United States has had since at least the 1850s.
Well,
and we know how that ended.
Not prettily.
No. And, you know, part of me hopes it ends that way now.
I just don't know anymore. All I know is we got, you know, 6 days and change left. The 6 days where all we have to do is keep on message.
And that's what we need to do. So drop this topic and let us talk about the Republicans running away from all the things that they have done and claiming things that they claiming, like Laura Bush, claiming support for stem cell research, when in fact that is the exact opposite, the precise opposite of what their record is.
Well, and of course it is. It is.
Okay. They're the only thing that comes out of Republicans' mouth, you know, a Republican's mouth is, you know, are lies. Absolutely. Without any doubt. And that has to be our big message, is that if a Republican is speaking to you, he is lying to you.
If his lips are moving.
That's right.
There's some lying going on. Ben, thanks.
You take care, sir.
Bye now. All right, and Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Happy Samhain.
Happy Samhain to you, too. Our cultural new year.
Yes. I was calling about your old Babs-to-be.
Yeah, disgusting, isn't she?
Yes. I just wanted to mention that she is, in fact, right when she said it's easy to manipulate emotions. She found that out when she ran down her boyfriend and killed him and got away with it.
Yeah, and when her cousin-in-law recently wiped out a cop in...
And got away with it. And then, of course, they're very good at manipulating emotions concerning abortion, race, Iraq, xenophobia, patriotism, all sorts of goodies.
Well, you know, it's again, we kind of had Flush Flimball in a corner for a while. He came out, what, I think maybe it was yesterday, and said, my friends, I was completely accurate on the Michael J. Fox, or on the Harold Ford issue, because as it turns out, he is dating a white woman. Or has dated a white woman. It's a legitimate issue.
Who gives a rip?
Right. Only the sickest and most twisted. But again, Chris Floyd, our friend who's appeared on the program a couple of times, Chris had an excellent piece at Truth Out today, in which he references his Southern heritage. And he talks about the fact that the ads against Harold Ford with the Harold Call Me and the jungle drums and all of that stuff were sleazy and reprehensible, and more than anything else, it appears they have worked.
Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Because if the margin of election is 1%, all you need is the weird little pillowcase crowd.
Right.
And you're over the top.
Speaking as the mother of a daughter, if she came home with a man and she said, Mom, I'm going to marry him, and he was black, I would have a couple of questions.
And they would be?
Is he a good man? Does he love you?
Right.
In that case, go for it.
With your blessings.
You bet.
Sure. Sure.
And I don't care if he's purple with pink polka dots. I know that's what matters. And I've only got the one daughter, so she is very, very precious to me. So
yeah.
That racial crap doesn't wash.
No. No. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't with anyone. But unfortunately, we're talking about the old Confederacy. You know, there hasn't been an African American senator from Tennessee since Reconstruction.
Yeah, I had the misfortune to live in the South before segregation was outlawed, and coming from Washington, Seattle, Washington, it was a monstrous shock. Culture shock was not describe it.
That had to be.
Yeah, because, you know, I was a school kid, and I kept asking my parents, Mommy, why can't I play with so-and-so? And they would say, well, I don't know. And it turned out because they were black.
Jesus.
You know, and...
Yeah, and this is 2006, and we're still dealing with this issue.
And it's ridiculous. But the big thing to me is what dear old Pickle said. Now, I got one other point to make.
Go right ahead.
Pickle's got something you should think about. Alzheimer's runs in families. Think about it.
Well, apparently she was, because in that clip she says, you know, and I would certainly like to see a cure before I get to the age he was.
Well, you should maybe think about people.
Well, maybe she should talk to her husband about the fact that those stem cell, that stem cell research that he says, or that she says he's the only president ever to have funded, lie.
Are contaminated.
Yeah, contaminated with mouse genetics.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like Island of Dr. Moreau stuff. Oh, there's a creepy story we could have gone into tonight.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, I mean, what good is a stem cell line that's corrupted with mouse DNA?
Uh-huh.
And it is. I mean, there's no debate about it. It simply is.
And here's something that I happened to think of last night. You see on, or at least where I am, you see these commercials for this cord blood bank.
Mm-hmm.
Where people can bank their baby's cord blood, which means stem cells.
Yeah. Oh, we're really, really on top of that one, Susan, because back in the dark ages, this would be 1997, my mother passed away.
Yeah.
And that was at the same time that our youngest was born. And Agnes begged my mother's treating physicians to let her donate our baby's cord blood, and they wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, so I'm sympathetic to all of that, and I'm up for research on adult stem cells.
Well, what gets me is, okay, these are live babies; they're perfectly healthy. These cords are being tossed in the garbage. So why not provide a central repository with the government funds for anybody who needs them? Because, let's face it, most people can't afford the cost of banking a baby's cord blood.
Right. But, you know, that would be government doing things that are responsive and realistic.
That would be sensible.
Yeah, it would be. Susan, thank you so much, and a very happy little evening to you as well.
Yeah, you too. I do have one request.
Okay.
If anyone in the readership, in the listenership area, has any ability to work with cover letters for jobs, can they get in touch with you and then me? Because I'm helping a lady in Jackson County with her resume and cover letter, and I'm not too hot with cover letters. I'm good with resumes, but I'm not too hot with cover letters. And I could use some help.
Okay. You guys got that? If you're good with cover letters, write to me. I'll turn it around to Susan.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Susan.
You have a nice night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And to our good friend Roy, calling from Texas. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
What do you say today?
I say it's a mess. I say that these daggum Republicans are a bunch of sleazy, no-good, lying, no-count, snake's belly in a wagon rut SOBs.
Yep. Well, old Charlie Rangel, he didn't make any bones about Dick Cheney being a son of a bitch. That's what he called him today.
I'm proud of Charlie Rangel.
Yeah. Well... Yeah.
You know, I'm up for these people fighting back. It's just fighting back and managing not to step on anything in the process that's kind of important.
Yeah.
You know, a miss is as good as a mile.
But, you know, just like the flap, they're trying to just act like it's the end of the world. The next thing to gay marriage or something like that, John Kerry's stepping on his tongue yesterday and saying the wrong thing. He really was making a joke and has tried to explain that. And then Snow, Bush, all of them come out just screaming, McCain, that he's got to apologize. And here he comes back and says, Bush is the one that needs to be apologizing to the troops for putting them in that situation. And so I guess the way I see it, it just kind of proves that they ain't got nothing else to run on. They just got to jump on anything and run all of these sleazy, scuzzy ads. Racist, any whatever they can dig up and try to hold on.
Whatever they can use, Roy, to drag out people that they are pretty well convinced are going to stay home on Election Day.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the you know, whether it's the racists or the religiously bigoted, those people have begun to see the lights come on, and they see no reason to come out in this election. And George and Carl have, by God, got to have them.
Mm-hmm.
And they will get those people out if they have to go and light individual crosses to bring them.
Yeah.
Makes me sick.
It is very sickening, and to have to read it, watch it, hear it, just, you know, I mean, it's just over and over. But Kerry said this afternoon, and I was glad he said it. He was talking about old Tony Snow and old Rush Limbaugh. He said, I'm not going to be lectured to by some White House mouthpiece stiff behind a podium or doughboy down in Florida about this deal.
And that's the appropriate response.
Yeah. But all of the media, they've tried to pick up on it like it's just the brand new Swift boat.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you pay attention to the mainstream media, it's, you know, John Kerry saying rotten things about the soldiers' mamas.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. But
so, you know, we've got a little job in front of us. If we hear it talked about outside the context of this program, in the grocery store line, at the gas pump, whatever, we've got a job in front of us to explain that away.
But seen another little real cute thing. They said, "Whoa, gasoline started back up yesterday." Hell yes, it starts back up. They're not going to keep it down.
Right. No. That's just a little shot across the bow, Roy. That's us finding out that, you know, well, you know, things could get worse if we let, you know.
Yeah.
And let those demon, well, they're demoncrats. Isn't that what we are, demoncrats?
Yeah. Oh, my God. But it is just pathetic that they do not have one damn thing to run on. And everybody's running away from Bush except just a handful of hardcore that he's trying to get.
Well, by golly, he got a stir. Where was he today? I did say he was live somewhere delivering a bunch of his putrid babbling somewhere this afternoon around 5 o'clock Eastern.
But, he was in Georgia.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought, Georgia, and you know, but even there, he has to be among the faithful.
Yeah, but the front page is for a week now here. The Dallas Morning News has been talking about Kay Bailey Hutchinson has all of a sudden got scared, and she was with Bush at Sugarland yesterday. And they're saying that it's still a long shot that this lady could unseat her, but they're looking over their shoulder and they're running scared.
Well, I want them to stay that way.
That would literally croak them if Kay Bailey was to get beat.
Oh, God, that would be wonderful. Because she's insane. I mean, Cornyn makes her look sane, but she's sane. She's crazy, too.
Well, Cornyn is just he's just another, he's just a pure rubber stamp, ignorant Tom DeLay type. That's all they are today.
Yep, and the sooner we clean the lot of them out, the better off we are.
Yeah.
Roy, good to talk to you, and hope to talk to you soon. We've got to go to the top of the hour news.
Good deal.
All right, bye now.
Goodbye.
Our good friend Roy from Texas, common sense from the heart of the Lone Star State. It's time for news. Let's do some of that. This is the Head On Radio Network, another creepy story at the top of the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
That's the worst monthly toll since January of 2005 and the fourth highest of the war. The U.S. Air Force is requesting $50 billion in emergency funding for fiscal 2007. A defense analyst says that request comes from Deputy Secretary of Defense Gordon England, who told the U.S. Armed Services to include the longer war on terror in their emergency request, not just funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. In California yesterday, former presidential candidate Senator John Kerry made controversial remarks about U.S. troops in a speech to students. He told them to study hard or they would, quote, get stuck in Iraq. President Bush called the remark insulting and shameful and called on Kerry to apologize. However, Kerry responded by saying that he will not apologize for his, quote, criticism of the president and of his broken policy. The National Journal reports more bloggers are being paid by Democratic and Republican campaigns to write favorably about their candidates and conduct opposition research on their opponents. Some bloggers are reportedly being paid several thousand dollars each month. In China today, officials enacted legislation that changes the way the death penalty is applied. The new law requires that the country's highest court approve before anyone is put to death. That follows criticism that innocent people have been executed. And the Homeland Security Department reports that arrests of illegal immigrants are down 8% in the past year. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Scientists are working on a male version of the birth control pill. That's according to today's edition of the journal Nature Medicine. The drug temporarily blocks the development of sperm but does not affect testosterone levels. Trials of the drug could begin in several years. The U.S. Justice Department has launched an antitrust probe into Sony's sales of its static random access memory chips. Sony's quarterly profit has already fallen 94% due to costs associated with the recall of millions of lithium batteries and poor sales of video games. IBM says it plans to set up new tech centers in both China and India from which to outsource its businesses. Microsoft is suing 55 dealers in 10 countries, charging them with pirating counterfeit software online. MySpace.com will start blocking users from uploading copyrighted music to its site. The site will use audio fingerprinting technology to review users' music files. Al Jazeera Television plans to launch Al Jazeera International in mid-November. The English-language channel will broadcast 24 hours and include live news and interview programs. Air America Radio is reportedly in talks about a possible sale, which could take place before Thanksgiving. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $58.61. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 6 points at 12,081. NASDAQ up 3, S&P 500 flat. There's more at Quality.
If you're a diet... It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, welcome back to this somewhat special Halloween edition of Head On. I said we've got a thing for each hour and a little bit out of the way. Oh, I don't know. If there's sufficient interest, I could probably be talked into doing the Raven, but I don't know. Let's see. Thank you, Igor. Let's see. Where are we going to go for this hour's bit of Halloween fun?
Your suffering will be legendary, even in hell.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do with that? Let's try this. Yeah, I like this. I visited St. Louis lately, and on my way west, after changing cars at Terre Haute, Indiana, a mild, benevolent-looking gentleman of about 45 or maybe 50 came in at one of the way stations and sat down beside me. We talked together pleasantly on various subjects for an hour, perhaps, and I found him exceedingly intelligent and entertaining. When he learned that I was from Washington, he immediately began to ask questions about various public men and about congressional affairs, and I saw very shortly that I was conversing with a man who was perfectly familiar with the ins and outs of political life at the Capitol, even to the ways and manners and customs of procedure of senators and representatives in the chambers of the national legislature. Presently, two men halted near us for a single moment, and one said to the other, "Harris, if you'll do that for me, I'll never forget you, my boy." My new comrade's eye lighted pleasantly. The words had touched upon a happy memory, I thought. Then his face settled into thoughtfulness, almost into gloom. He turned to me and said, "Let me tell you a story. Let me give you a secret chapter of my life. A chapter that has never been referred to me, by me, since its events transpired. Listen patiently and promise that you will not interrupt me." I said I would not. And he related the following strange adventure, speaking sometimes with animation, sometimes with melancholy, but always with feeling and earnestness. On the 19th of December, 1853, I started from St. Louis on the evening train bound for Chicago. There were only 24 passengers all told. There were no ladies and no children. We were in excellent spirits, and pleasant acquaintanceships were soon formed. The journey bade fair to be a happy one, and no individual in the party, I think, had even the vaguest presentiment of the horrors we were soon to undergo. At 11 p.m. it began to snow hard. Shortly after leaving the small village of Weldon, we entered upon that tremendous prairie solitude that stretches its leagues on leagues of houseless dreariness far away toward the Jubilee settlements. The winds, unobstructed by trees or hills or even vagrant rocks, whistled fiercely across the level desert, driving the fallen snow before it like spray from the crested waves of a stormy sea. The snow was deepening fast, and we knew by the diminished speed of the train that the engine was plowing through it with steadily increasing difficulty. Indeed, it almost came to a dead halt sometimes in the midst of great drifts that piled themselves like colossal graves across the track. Conversation began to flag. Cheerfulness gave place to grave concern. The possibility of being imprisoned in the snow on the bleak prairie 50 miles from any house presented itself to every mind and extended its depressing influence over every spirit. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I was aroused out of an uneasy slumber by the ceasing of all motion about me. The appalling truth flashed upon me instantly. We were captives in a snowdrift. All hands to the rescue! Every man sprang to obey. Out into the wild night, the pitchy darkness, the billowy snow, the driving storm, every soul leaped with the consciousness that a moment lost now might bring destruction to us all. Shovels, hands, boards, anything, everything that could displace snow was brought into instant requisition. It was a weird picture. That small company of frantic men, fighting the banking snows, half in the blackest shadow and half in the angry light of the locomotive's reflector. One short hour sufficed to prove the utter uselessness of our efforts. The storm barricaded the track with a dozen drifts while we dug one away. And worse than this, it was discovered that the last grand charge the engine had made upon the enemy had broken the fore and aft shaft of the driving wheel. With a free track before us, we should still have been helpless. We entered the car wearied with labor and very sorrowful. We gathered about the stoves and gravely canvassed our situation. We had no provisions whatever. In this lay our chief distress. We could not freeze, for there was a good supply of wood in the tender. This was our only comfort. The discussion ended at last in accepting the disheartening decision of the conductor, viz., that it would be death for any man to attempt to travel 50 miles on foot through the snow like that. We could not send for help, and even if we could, it would not come. We must submit and await, as patiently as we might, succor or starvation. I think the stoutest heart there felt a momentary chill when those words were uttered. Within the hour, conversation subsided to a low murmur here and there about the car, caught fitfully between the rising and falling of the blast. The lamps grew dim, and the majority of the castaways settled themselves among the flickering shadows to think, to forget the present, if they could, to sleep, if they might. The eternal night. It surely seemed eternal to us. Wore its lagging hours away at last, and the cold gray dawn broke in the east. As the light grew stronger, the passengers began to stir and give signs of life, one after another, and each in turn pushed his slouched hat up from his forehead, stretched his stiffened limbs, and glanced out of the windows upon the cheerless prospect. It was cheerless indeed. Not a living thing visible anywhere. Not a human habitation. Nothing but a vast white desert. Uplifted sheets of snow drifting hither and thither before the wind. A world of eddying flakes shutting out the firmament above. All day we moped about the cars, saying little, thinking much. Another lingering, dreary night. And hunger. Another dawning, another day of silence, sadness, wasting hunger, hopeless watching for succor that would not come. A night of restless slumber filled with dreams of feasting, wakings distressed with the gnawings of hunger. The fourth day came and went. And the fifth. 5 days of dreadful imprisonment. A savage hunger looked out at every eye. There was in it a sign of awful import, the foreshadowing of a something that was vaguely shaping itself in every heart, as something which no tongue dared yet to frame into words. The sixth day passed. The seventh dawned upon us, as gaunt and haggard and hopeless a company of men as ever stood in the shadow of death. It must out now. That thing which had been growing up in every heart was ready to leap from every lip at last. Nature had been taxed to the utmost. She must yield. Richard H. Gaston of Minnesota, tall, cadaverous, and pale, rose up. All knew what was coming. All prepared. Every emotion, every semblance of excitement, was smothered. Only a calm, thoughtful seriousness appeared in the eyes that were lately so wild. Gentlemen, it cannot be delayed longer. The time is at hand. We must determine which of us shall die to furnish food for the rest. Mr. John J. Williams of Illinois rose and said, Gentlemen, I nominate the Reverend James Sawyer of Tennessee. Mr. William R. Adams of Indiana said, I nominate Mr. Daniel Sloat of New York. Mr. Charles J. Langdon, I nominate Mr. Samuel A. Bowen of St. Louis. Mr. Sloat, Gentlemen, I desire to decline in favor of Mr. John A. Van Nostrand of New Jersey. Mr. Gaston, if there be no objection, the gentleman's desire will be acceded to. Mr. Van Nostrand objecting, the resignation of Mr. Sloat was rejected. The resignations of Messrs. Sawyer and Bowen were also offered and refused upon the same grounds. Mr. A. L. Bascom of Ohio, I move that the nominations now close and that the House proceed to an election by ballot. Mr. Sawyer, Gentlemen, I protest earnestly against these proceedings. They are in every way irregular and unbecoming. I must beg to move that they be dropped at once, and that we elect a chairman of the meeting and proper officers to assist him, and then we can go on with the business before us understandingly. Mr. Bell of Iowa. Gentlemen, I object. This is no time to stand upon forms and ceremonious observances. For more than 7 days we have been without food. Every moment we lose in idle discussion increases our distress. I am satisfied with the nominations that have been made. Every gentleman present is, I believe, and I, for one, do not see why we should not proceed at once to elect one or more of them. I wish to offer a resolution, Mr. Gaston. It would be objected to and have to lie over one day under the rules, thus bringing about the very delay you wish to avoid. The gentleman from New Jersey, Mr. Van Nostrand. Gentlemen, I am a stranger among you. I have not sought the distinction that has been conferred upon me, and I feel a delicacy. Mr. Morgan of Alabama interrupting. I'll move the previous question. The motion was carried, and further debate shut off, of course. The motion to elect officers was passed, and under it Mr. Gaston was chosen chairman, Mr. Blake secretary, Messrs. Holcomb, Dyer, and Baldwin, a committee on nominations, and Mr. R. M. Howland, purveyor, to assist the committee in making selections. A recess of half an hour was then taken, and some little caucusing followed. At the sound of the gavel, the meeting reassembled, and the committee reported in favor of Messrs. George Ferguson of Kentucky, Lucien Herman of Louisiana, and W. Messick of Colorado as candidates. The report was accepted. Mr. Rogers of Missouri.
Mr. President, the report being properly before the House now, I move to amend it by substituting for the name of Mr. Herman that of Mr. Lucius Harris of St. Louis, who is well and honorably known to us all. I do not wish to be understood as casting the least reflection upon the high character and standing of the gentleman from Louisiana, far from it. I respect and esteem him as much as any gentleman here present possibly can. But none of us can be blind to the fact that he has lost more flesh during the week than we have lain here than any among us. None of us can be blind to the fact that the committee has been derelict in its duty, either through negligence or a graver fault, in thus offering for our suffrages a gentleman who, however pure his own motives may be, has really less nutriment in him.
The chair. The gentleman from Missouri will take his seat. The chair cannot allow the integrity of the committee to be questioned, save by the regular course under the rules. What action will the House take upon the gentleman's motion? Mr. Halliday of Virginia.
I move to further amend the report by substituting Mr. Harvey Davis of Oregon for Mr. Messick. It may be urged by a gentleman that the hardships and privations of a frontier life have rendered Mr. Davis tough. But, gentlemen, is this a time to cavil at toughness? Is this a time to be fastidious concerning trifles? Is this a time to dispute about matters of paltry significance? No, gentlemen, bulk is what we desire. Substance, weight, bulk. These are the supreme requisites now, not talent, not genius, not education. I insist upon my motion.
Mr. Morgan, excitedly.
Mr. Chairman, I do most strenuously object to this amendment. The gentleman from Oregon is old and, furthermore, is bulky only in bone, not in flesh. I ask the gentleman from Virginia if it is soup we want instead of solid sustenance, if he would delude us with shadows, if he would mock our suffering with an Oregonian specter. I ask him if he can look upon the anxious faces around him, if he can gaze into our sad eyes, if he can listen to the beating of our expectant hearts, and still thrust this famine-stricken fraud upon us. I ask if he can think of our desolate state, of our past sorrows, of our dark future, and still unpityingly foist upon us this wreck, this ruin, this tottering swindle, this gnarled and belighted and sapless vagabond from Oregon's hospitable shores. Never!
The amendment was put to a vote after a fiery debate and lost. Mr. Harris was substituted on the First Amendment. The balloting then began. 5 ballots were held without a choice. On the 6th, Mr. Harris was elected, all voting for him but himself. It was then moved that his election should be ratified by acclamation, which was lost in consequence of his again voting against himself. Mr. Radway moved that the House now take up the remaining candidates and go into an election for breakfast. This was carried. On the first ballot, there was a tie, half the members favoring one candidate on account of his youth, and half favoring the other on account of his superior size. The president gave the casting vote for the latter, Mr. Messick. This decision created considerable dissatisfaction among the friends of Mr. Ferguson, the defeated candidate, and there was some talk of demanding a new ballot, but in the midst of it, a motion to adjourn was carried, and the meeting broke up at once. The preparations for supper diverted the attention of the Ferguson faction from the discussion of their grievance for a long time, and then, when they would have taken it up again, the happy announcement that Mr. Harris was ready drove all thought of it into the winds. We improvised tables by propping up the backs of car seats and sat down with hearts full of gratitude to the finest supper that had blessed our vision for 7 torturing days. How changed we were from what we had been a few short hours before. Hopeless, sad-eyed misery, hunger, feverish anxiety, desperation, and then thankfulness, serenity, joy too deep for utterance now. That, I know, was the cheeriest hour of my eventful life. The winds howled and blew the snow wildly about our prison house, but they were powerless to distress us any more. I liked Harris. He might have been better done, perhaps, but I am free to say that no man ever agreed with me better than Harris, or afforded me so large a degree of satisfaction. Messick was very well, though rather highly flavored. But for genuine nutritiousness and delicacy of fiber, give me Harris. Messick had his good points. I will not attempt to deny it, nor do I wish to do. But he was no more fitted for breakfast than a mummy would be. No, sir, not a bit. Lean? Why, bless me. And tough? Oh, he was very tough. You could not imagine it. You could never imagine anything like it. Do you mean to tell me that... Do not interrupt me, please. After breakfast, we elected a man by the name of Walker from Detroit for supper. He was very good. I wrote his wife so afterward. He was worthy of all praise. I shall always remember Walker. He was a little rare, but very good. And then the next morning we had Morgan of Alabama for breakfast. He was one of the finest men I ever sat down to. Handsome, educated, refined, spoke several languages fluently, a perfect gentleman. He was a perfect gentleman, and singularly juicy. For supper we had that Oregon patriarch, and he was a fraud. There is no question about it. Old, scraggy, tough, nobody can picture the reality. I finally said, "Gentlemen, you can do as you like, but I will wait for another election." And Grimes of Illinois said, "Gentlemen, I will wait ill also. When you elect a man that has something to recommend him, I shall be glad to join you again." It soon became evident that there was a general dissatisfaction with Davis of Oregon, and so, to preserve the goodwill that had prevailed so pleasantly since we had had Harris, an election was called, and the result was that Baker of Georgia was chosen. He was splendid. Well, after that we had Doolittle and Hawkins and McElroy. There was some complaint about McElroy because he was uncommonly short and thin. And Penrod and Toothsmiths and Bailey. Bailey had a wooden leg, which was a clear loss, but he was otherwise good. And an Indian boy and an organ grinder and a gentleman by the name of Buckminster. Poor stick of a vagabond that wasn't any good for company and no account for breakfast. We were glad we got him elected before relief came. And so the blessed relief did come at last. Yes, it came one bright sunny morning just after election. John Murphy was the choice, and there never was a better. I'm willing to testify, but John Murphy came home with us in the train that came to succor us and lived to marry the Widow Harris, relic of our first choice. He married her and is happy and respected and prosperous yet. Ah, it was like a novel, sir. It was like a romance. This is my stopping place, sir. I must bid you goodbye. Any time that you can make it convenient to tarry a day or two with me, I shall be glad to have you. I like you, sir. I have conceived an affection for you. I could like you as well as I liked Harris himself, sir. Good day, sir, and a pleasant journey. He was gone. I never felt so stunned, so distressed, so bewildered in my life, but in my soul I was glad he was gone. With all his gentleness of manner and his soft voice, I shuddered whenever he turned his hungry eye upon me, and when I heard that I had achieved his perilous affection, and that I stood almost with the late Harris in his esteem, my heart fairly stood still. I was bewildered beyond description. I did not doubt his word. I could not question a single item in a statement so stamped with the earnestness of truth as his. But its dreadful details overpowered me and threw my thoughts into hopeless confusion. I saw the conductor looking at me. I said, "Who is that man?"
"He was a member of Congress once, and a good one. But he got caught in a snowdrift in the cars and liked to have been starved to death. He got so frostbitten and frozen up generally and used up for want of something to eat that he was sick and out of his head for 2 or 3 months afterward. He's all right now, only he's a monomaniac. And when he gets on that old subject, he never stops till he has eat up that whole carload of people he talks about. He would have finished the crowd by this time, only he had to get out here. He has got their names as pat as ABC. When he gets them all eat up by himself, he always says, 'Then the hour for the usual election before breakfast having arrived, and there being no opposition, I was duly elected, after which there being no objections offered, I resigned, thus I am here.' I felt inexpressibly relieved to know that I had only been listening to the harmless vagaries of a madman, instead of the genuine experiences of a bloodthirsty cannibal." Mark Twain, Cannibalism in the Cars. Let's go to the phones. David is with us, calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, I'm kind of surprised by, I think you know what I'm going to talk about. I'm kind of surprised by the whole carried comment thing, because I thought we learned that this is a 10-second soundbite society.
I did, too.
And one of the things that struck me was that when you read it, the Kerry campaign must know about YouTube. I just looked at the YouTube responses, and there's over 2,000 just on that video alone. And one of the things that struck me about it is that one of the guys said something. I don't know if he was joking. He probably was not. He goes, "I have a friend who works for the Republicans part-time, and he gets paid $1 a post to make something positive about them." And I was like, my God, $1 a post? That kind of surprised me. The second thing that surprised me about this whole thing is that why did he have to give a speech today?
Well, it wasn't a speech yesterday.
Oh, was the speech yesterday?
I don't know. Maybe I'm confused. But the big response, the real both barrels of the shotgun blast back response was today.
There's only one way that we can salvage something like this, and that's to put the focus back on the war and to get the focus off of what Kerry's saying.
Right.
And that's going to be tricky to do.
Tricky? It's going to be difficult.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult to do. But, I mean, I think one thing that's in our favor is if we keep talking about the war, and as tragic as this sounds, if the death toll keeps going crazy in Iraq, it's going to keep putting the ghosts right front and center of what this war is about. And I think a lot of people are going to be motivated to go to the polls in our favor, and we do have a little bit of backlash from the Republicans, but how much is fabricated has yet to be seen.
Well, the response that you see out in the, you know, I got a call, I got a message during the top of the hour news, David. Apparently, Lou Dobbs made his poll question about John Kerry And something on the order of 75% or so of the people responding said John Kerry has nothing to apologize for. That bodes well.
Did you see the American Legion response?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's to be expected.
It's one of those, how dare he, oh, shame upon him, our troops defend our freedom.
Yeah, the president of the American Legion put it on the front page.
Ugh.
And I don't know what Nancy Pelosi is going to do. I'm scared of her response.
Well, you know, I think the key here is to not respond.
I think, that's going to be the part of the problem because they own this news cycle now. You have to think of it in terms of mathematics and strategy and logistics and what have you. So they own this news cycle right now. So the key is to, how do we jump in and get back on the offense on this in the next few days? That's what Democrat strategists should be thinking in a room right now instead of like.
Well, you can't come out and talk about John Kerry per se.
Yeah, I know.
What you can do, however, is come out and talk about what John Kerry was talking about. Stay on message with John Kerry, which I think is fine.
I mean, I don't understand. Whoever wrote that joke should be fired. Even I can see it reading it. He says, and you make an effort to be smart, you can do well, and if you don't, you get stuck in a rock. And to be fair, if this was I actually don't think the Democrats would jump on something like this. Maybe they would. I don't know, but I can see how you have your 10-second soundbite right there.
Well, I question my biggest question is as to this the propriety of doing it all, David, of doing it at all. And secondly, you know, being someone who is behind the microphone most every night, I can tell you that this is a territory that is rife with possibilities for huge screw-ups, even the ones that don't present themselves ordinarily. Some of the great bloopers of all time. There was one time a guy was reading a public service announcement. You know, boring, bland little public service announcements on index cards. You got the microphone open, and, you know, and there's going to be a church bazaar next week. And he comes around to this one, and he finally says, and there will be a Peter pulling contest at St. Taffy's Church.
Did you see the dialogue with Tony Snow and the White House press corps yet?
Oh, yeah. Tony Snow is just sleazy. And of course, you know, they jumped on this as a way to paint the Democrats as, you know, we hate the troops and we're soft on terror and wouldn't know how to manage a war and blah 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 blah.
And it doesn't make any sense because this is the worst managed war we've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, like these guys got it right. No, they didn't.
You know, moving on to another issue of the George Allen. I don't know if you heard about this, but Mike Stark got arrested.
No, well, they arrested him?
Yeah, it's on the news, by the way.
I mean, I saw the video of him getting tackled and everything.
You know why they tackled him?
No, because he asked George Allen why he spit on his wife.
Yeah, and about the arrest warrants, and they didn't like that. Well, to me, I think Mike Stark's a patriot because nobody's asking that. Nobody dared ask that. But then on the other side of things, I'm like, what are you doing? We live in the days of no habeas corpus here.
Well, but I mean, do you have any idea, David, what the charge was?
I don't know if he got arrested, but
I thought you said he got arrested.
I thought he did. I thought that was the news was trying to.
No, he was assaulted. I mean, no, those were law enforcement people. That was just George Allen's little cadre of Klansmen thugs that travels with him, as far as I understand it.
Right, but couldn't they arrest him if they made something?
He'd have to have committed a crime.
Yeah.
You know what? Creating a public disturbance. I mean, that's, you know, the disturbance didn't start. I mean, so, you know, I frankly wouldn't want to be part of that if I was the cops. Because asking a candidate who is out there in public to face the public a question does not constitute creating a public disturbance. He certainly didn't put Allen in fear of receiving an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature, so it wasn't an assault.
I wonder if anyone is going to be able to get those divorce papers as the, well, it can't be October surprise, as the November surprise.
Well, you know, several Democrats have written a letter to the State Bar of Virginia demanding that the bar release Allen's application because it would have an explanation of those charges in it.
Don't they just, like, don't they just laugh at those letters and say, oh, ha, ha, those
I don't know. It's the state bar, and, of course, it is old Virginia.
And, you know, I think one of the biggest primary things that the Democrats need to be concerned about is we need to, and this always happens to everybody eventually, we need to get our, in a political party, we need to get our credibility back as they, as standing by and saying what we're going to do. And standing up and not sitting down ever again, even after the election. I hope I'm telling you what, if people sit down after this election, and they come close, I'm just gonna say, well, the Democrats don't deserve to get it if they're gonna do that.
Well, we have to wait and see, David, what happens with the electronic voting. To be entirely fair on this issue, because we know from the Miami Herald reporting that I mentioned last night that people are going in for early voting at the polls in Florida, and they're pressing the screen for Jim Davis. Is it Jim Davis that's running? Davis running for governor. And they get to the end screen where they confirm their vote, and lo and behold, damned if they haven't voted for Crist.
Well, I don't know if people...
And it's happened, and the thing is, David, now it's being reported as also happening in Texas.
Well, I don't know if people know this, but when I was listening to the Drudge Report on the radio, they were talking about one of the guys, I forget his name, he's on Opinion Journal, and they're going strong on the... Since we're taking the electronic voting issue, the American Enterprise Institute is taking up the issue of absentee voting, and I don't know if you know this, but they got a book out now on absentee voting, and they try to paint it as it's bad for Democrats and it's also bad for Republicans. And you know what was funny about it, which again is interesting, that nobody ever has sound bites from the Drudge Report, because they have some good callers on there. There's a caller that called up and said, why aren't you talking about electronic voting machines? And then the guy was like, well, that's an issue, but I don't think it's not. And he tried so hard to backpedal, but this woman wouldn't get up. She wouldn't give up. She was like, no, you have to understand about electronic voting machines and who owns the corporations. It's like, well, I don't know about that. We may have a problem. And, I mean, that's what people – I mean, it's what I was talking about before yesterday. You can't just let have someone to say. I mean, if you have that vacuum of time and you have somebody off balance, you just have to keep hitting them.
Well, yeah, and hit them and hit them and hit them, and when they try to, but that's something, I don't know. The Democratic Party has a problem with trying to remain civil in an incivil world.
Well, you know, the problem is I noticed this, is that a lot of people who care about this country are kind of, shall we say, non-confrontational with a lot of these people. Like when Paul Bremer was on Alan Combs, I've said this before, I asked him straight up, I said, Mr. Bremer, American Conservative Magazine says you have a $600 million. You said you had a $600 million slush fund in Iraq. Is there any bit of credibility to that report? And he was taken back by that. And see, if we have more people who constantly, no matter where they are, you constantly have these questions. You constantly just continue to take these slight jabs that are intelligent questions. I'm telling you, I don't understand about this name calling. We need to get off that, and we need to get back to really just punching hard on the issues.
Well, I don't think it's name calling to suggest that a bunch of people who avoided service for all they're worth have sent 3,000 people to their death. I don't think that's name calling. What I'm concerned with is, in many ways, the personalities involved. John Kerry is not the guy we want out there being the point man right now. He's done some good work. Since 2004, he's said a lot of good things. He's fought hard for the party. He's fought hard to raise funds. And I applaud every last little bit of this. but he is not the guy to have out there as the visible face of the Democratic Party right now. The only thing that would polarize and bring the weirdos out of the closet and get them voting instead of staying home where they need to, I'm talking about the hardcore right-wing pigs, is a polarizing force like John Kerry. The only one that would be worse is if it was Hillary. And I'm not trying to be mean to Kerry or mean to Hillary. These are just political facts. You know,
where did Teresa Hines Kerry go anyway? She just stopped because people are making fun of her name?
No, there's no need for her to be out there. She's a very private woman. It makes perfectly good sense to me. My concern is that we get back on message. The message is these people are incompetent. You know, I'd like to hear that word used, incompetent. I'd like to hear the word screw-ups used.
Oh, did you catch that clip of where Sean Hannity? Sean Hannity hated this. He was right in front of the troops, and they go to Colonel David Hunt, the Fox analyst.
Oh, yeah, I got that.
That was priceless.
Yeah, where he says Webb's the better man.
Yeah, even those little cadets, they didn't even realize. They were like, huh? Isn't he a Democrat, though?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm well familiar with that, but it's about the daggum message. You know, and other people can say it besides John Kerry. The people who have been to Iraq, you know, Tammy Duckworth running in Illinois is perfectly positioned to say straight up the same things that John Kerry said today.
If we're looking at percentages, strictly from your point of saying, as of Tuesday today, this evening, what is the percentage that we will take the House?
Oh, I think it's better than 50-50.
Yeah.
I think
it's probably 40.
I mean...
40-60.
No, I'd say 55-45 against...
55-45, really?
Against taking the Senate. But the thing is, it's a lot easier to figure the numbers on the Senate because there are fewer significant races. You know, Conrad Burns in Montana. I think it appears, and last I read, he's toast. You know, Mike DeWine in Ohio is toast. Rick Santorum is toast. So, and maybe even Lincoln Chafee. So the real races that, you know, it comes down to Missouri, it comes down to Tennessee.
I wonder if those states have a lot of libertarian candidates, because I was looking at a Daily Coast poll, and I'm not sure how accurate they are, but they were showing some of these libertarian candidates with like 5 or 4. And I was like, oh my God.
I'm not entirely certain about that, but you know, and of course, you know, in every race, it benefits the Republican Party to get that libertarian vote out. I mean, that's why the Republicans gave so god-awful much money to the Green Party candidate running in Pennsylvania as a desperate attempt to help Santorum withstand this charge from the charge from Casey.
I mean, the independent, I believe that the not just the independent are padded with cloaked Republicans, but the libertarian as well.
Oh, yeah, scratch a libertarian.
I mean, they say, well, I'm not a Republican anymore. I'm a libertarian. I don't trust, you know, Bob, this may sound cynical, but I don't trust anyone with an American Eagle avatar. I don't.
Well, you know, you got to remember the nature of the eagle.
Yeah.
Iraq is a very eagle kind of thing, because the American Eagle, the eagle, never attacks anything its own size, and would prefer to eat something dead as opposed to actually having to fight for it. Ben Franklin was very, very, very on the ball when he suggested the wild turkey.
You know, one of the things that surprised me was how Wolf Blitzer was shocked that Lynn Cheney really had these feelings about the Democrats. He was like, he looked really surprised, like, I can't believe you're saying this. Like, how much of a bubble do you have to live in?
I know. But then again, he works 6 or 7 days a week.
And on that note, I hear the music.
Yeah, the really creepy music.
Yeah,
happy Halloween, David. All right.
R.I.P. Later.
Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Tubular Bells.
Exorcist.
Yeah, Tubular Bells. It's the theme from The Exorcist, dear. Mike Oldfield? Yeah. This is the Head On Radio Network. Blah. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
A gallon of gas and a gallon of milk. That's what 1 hour of minimum wage work will buy. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
When the plant closed, I took this job paying just a little more than the minimum wage. But I still can't support my family. Somebody should raise the bar.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here is the truth the oil companies won't tell you. Half the foreign oil they import to California is from the Middle East. As a result, California is dangerously dependent on foreign oil. Prop 87 means more alternative fuels and wind and solar power, and that means less oil dependence. Prop 87 is the one thing Californians can do now to clean up the air, help stop the climate crisis, and free us from foreign oil. The sooner we do it, the safer we'll be.
Before the hour, Head On for Halloween, Agnes's favorite holiday of the year.
Like the evil bunnies too.
Yeah, sitting here all done up in what is this? Your Buffy the Vampire Slayer costume?
Buffy the Republican Slayer.
Buffy the Republican Slayer. Yeah. Okay. Got an email here from our friend Andy in the Netherlands. And he says, the way I see it, the very core political marketing question for the Democrats can be demonstrated by the following hypothetical situation. Okay, work with me here. You're at a social event trying to be cool, and all of a sudden some underage snot walks up to you and starts pointing fingers at you, telling lies about you, and calling you a poopy face. Dead silence falls. and all eyes are on you. What do you say, Andy asks. What do you say while remaining civil and having everyone think you're really cool? I reckon if you can answer that question, you've won the election. And Andy P.S.'s. I haven't been able to answer that question myself, not in a civil manner anyway. If I do, I'll let you know. And, well, my thoughts on that, my thought on that, my idea, I know, treat it kindly, it's in a strange place, is that there are times, and you know, it's recognized within the law of several, maybe a few states yet, especially southern states where dueling was a problem. You have offended my honor, sir. And you draw the sword and you demand that, you know, meet me upon the field of honor. Why was it ever called the field of honor? It should have been called the field of blatant, abject stupidity. But no, there are statutes, and I think it's still in the books here in West Virginia, that are called fighting words statutes. And it says that there are some cases where words are so hateful that they are just the same as being physically struck, and that if you strike the person who uttered them, you will not be deemed to have started the fight, but rather to have responded to a battery. In other words, it is as if in hitting the person, you were hit first. And it's a way of trying to avoid dueling. There are some times when punching the guy who said the rotten crap is the only legitimate response. I call your attention to the debate between Michael Dukakis and George Bush. What was that, 1988? Yeah. Who was it? Bernie Shaw, who said, Governor Dukakis, you have stated repeatedly that you're against the death penalty. What if a rapist like Willie Horton got out and banged your wife like a cheap Chinese drum? Would you still be against the death penalty if he raped and murdered your wife? You know, that's one of those questions where you come across the podium and you pummel the living daylights out of Bernie Shaw. Or you do so verbally. So, you know, what do you... John Kerry's response was the right response. My problem is the idea of putting John Kerry in the middle of this election right now. I know, move on. Yeah, talk about Laura Bush Saturday. Where's the outrage of the mainstream media about Laura Bush saying, well, you know, Michael J. Fox is just trying to manipulate people's emotions. Zzz. You know, all she had to do was say beautiful mind, and instantaneously it would be clear that she had taken the scepter from Babs and was now the queen of mean in the White House. You know, the business with George Allen. He now has a gang of Klansmen around with him who tackle people who ask him questions. Sir, why did you spit on your wife? And, of course, the mainstream media goes running up to George Allen. Senator Allen, are you okay? Can we get you a cold compress? Are you going to be all right? Did that mean voter hurt you, Senator Allen? What was George Allen's response to it?
Well, you know, in politics, you got to expect this kind of thing.
What kind of thing? That people are going to come up and ask you about your rotten, tawdry, filthy, Republican, right-wing, racist past? And you're still not going to answer the question? Is that what you've got to come to terms with, Senator Allen? Lord, Lord, Lord. Go watch the video. Not right now. At your leisure. See the video. They tackled him like they tackled John Hinckley for shooting Reagan. You know, this is Mike Stark. Mike Stark's, I mean, he's got a history. You know, this is the callingallwingnuts.com guy. This is the guy who humiliates people like Hannity and O'Reilly and those thugs. And I understand Mr. Stark is in his first year of law school at the University of Virginia, which tells me that he ain't no dummy. And he went and he asked the question and got the living bejesus pummeled out of him. So I guess that ties into Andy in the Netherlands question as well. How do you respond to this kind of thing? Well, the thugs in George Allen's campaign respond to a simple question. Why did you spit on your wife? Your first wife, whom you divorced, you family values guy, you. He asked the question, and the Allen and the Allen brown shirts come up and tackle him, assault him, commit upon him a common law battery, if you will. So that's how they respond. That's how, you know, that. I guess they were afraid that George Allen was going to say macaca again or something.
I think that I am familiar with the fact that you are going to ignore this particular problem until it swims up and bites you on the ass.
Or something like that. It goes on and on and on. You know, like I said, if you get a chance, go over to truthout.org and read Chris Floyd's piece about his Southern upbringing, growing up in Tennessee, and the real meaning of the racist Republican ads. Have a look at that. Now, the question is, where do we go from here? How do you keep this discussion on Republican incompetence, Republican screw-ups? You know, we got a bunch of plates in the air we're juggling right now. We're finding out, if you listen to this program or other similar progressive talk programs, you know that the election machines are filthy, and you know that they're corrupt, and you know that they're already, you know, they pre-hacked for your convenience. We got that to worry about. And frankly, we've got to keep this thing about George Bush. I mean, here in West Virginia, you've got a guy named Don Blankenship. This being Halloween, we'll refer to him by his proper name, Don Blankenstein. And this sleazy bastard is running around spending a million plus bucks on something called "And for the Sake of the Childrens," in which he is pouring money into right-wing Republican campaigns because his goal is to take over the control of the West Virginia legislature so he can blow up mountains more quickly and make more money. And the trick when you're dealing with a thug like that is to find a photograph of him standing next to George Bush and say, you know, these are the stakes. This isn't about for the sake of the kids. This is for the sake of the Republicans, for the love of God. Right? Now, I didn't even know we had a recording of Mr. Blankenstein in the computer. Somehow or another, we got to get back on message. And the message is there are nearly 3,000 dead American servicemen and women who are dead for want of simple competence. Not for want of genius. Not for want of extraordinary measures, of heroic actions. They are dead for want of simple competence. I refer you again, oh, heavens to Betsy. Nope, not that one either. The story that I've been hammering on for the last couple of nights, yeah. The book that's out, Ghost Plane. by Stephen Gray that confirms once and for all that the Iraq war was started because these goobers in the Bush administration actually believed a guy who had just spent the last 36 or 72 hours with, being whacked in the feet with a bamboo pole and having his head stuck underwater. When he said, oh, yeah, what is it you want? Oh, you want to, yeah, I'm with Al-Qaeda, okay, and Al-Qaeda, we got a lodge chapter in Baghdad, but Saddam Hussein comes there every second Thursday when we meet, knows the high sign and everything. Oh, yeah, we're all sucked up with Saddam Hussein, Al-Qaeda, it's the same thing. Just don't put me back in the water. And that evidence, garnered by torture, garnered and believed by people who were wholly and completely incompetent, has gotten 3,000 people killed, 20,000+ Americans maimed, wounded, broken for life, and more than 600,000 Iraqis dead, damn it, dead! There's the message. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
Dollars to train and equip more Iraqi security forces. That's in addition to the approximately $10 billion the U.S. has already spent on developing the current forces. Rumsfeld did not specify the size of the increase, but yesterday the top U.S. commander in Iraq, General George Casey, recommended an increase of 100,000. The proposal must still be reviewed by the White House and government agencies. The top Democrat on the House Armed Services Committee says the expansion likely means that it will take longer than 12 to 18 months it was estimated earlier for the Iraqis to take over security duties. In California yesterday, former presidential candidate Senator John Kerry made controversial remarks about U.S. troops in a speech to students. He told them to study hard or they would, quote, get stuck in Iraq, end quote. President Bush called the remark insulting and shameful. North Korea has reportedly agreed to return to six-party talks about its nuclear program. The agreement was reached after envoys from the U.S., North Korea, and China met in Beijing. The North pulled out of talks 11 months ago, but they're expected to resume in November or December. In Washington, President Bush cautiously welcomed the decision, but U.S. officials also say the return to the talks is not enough to stop the U.N.-imposed sanctions after Pyongyang's recent nuclear test. Two more U.S. soldiers were killed in Iraq yesterday, bringing the death total this month to 103. That's the worst monthly death toll since January of 2005. In Sadr City, a Shiite militia stronghold, U.S. forces have left some checkpoints in the area. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki ordered that they leave, a move largely seen as a way to assert his authority and appeal to his political base. So far, more than 300 U.S. cities have agreed to abide by the 1997 Kyoto Protocols, even though the U.S. government has not. The Christian Science Monitor reports that last year, through energy savings and infrastructure upgrades, about two-thirds of the cities reduced their greenhouse emissions by 23 tons. The Homeland Security Department reports that border arrests of illegal immigrants dropped 8% over the last year. The agency credits the addition of new surveillance technology and the hiring of nearly 2,000 extra border guards. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Babies who have abnormal nerve cells in the lowest part of the brainstem appear more likely to die of SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome. The full report is available in this week's Journal of the American Medical Association. NASA says it will launch a mission in May 2008 to repair the Hubble telescope. The crew hopes to extend the telescope's life to 2013. MySpace.com will start blocking users from uploading copyrighted music to its site. The site will use audio fingerprinting technology to review users' music files. Al Jazeera Television plans to launch Al Jazeera International in mid-November. The English language channel will broadcast 24 hours and include live news, interview programs, features, and analysis. Two rival French broadcasting agencies are joining together to create France 24, a 24-hour satellite news channel that company officials say will bring a fresh perspective and French values to the news. France 24 hopes to counter what it calls the Anglo-Saxon views of networks such as CNN and BBC. After filing for bankruptcy protection earlier this month, Air America Radio is now in talks about a possible sale. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $58.62. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 6 points at 12,081. NASDAQ up 3 points at 2367. S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Not available in all states.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
And I have to tell you, if you wander into the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room this evening in the next hour, or, well, I don't know, people sit around and listen. We sit around and listen to Malloy in the chat room as well. It is a psychotic Halloween nightmare in there. I think Agnes and I are the only ones under our own names right now. We've got Chester Arthur, Condi Rice, Ghost of Low Gas Prices, Grover Norquist, Ice Cube Phantom, John Negroponte, Juan Valdez, Mush Flemball, Simple Simon, Stephen Colbert, and yeah, there are a few others still under their regular names. But it's zany in there, and people... If you've never been in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, avail yourself of it. It's a fun time. It's the most fun you can have and still have your clothes on. Almost 7 minutes after the hour, we are joined by our good friend, Florida senatorial candidate, independent Florida senatorial candidate, and peace candidate, Brian Moore. Brian, good evening. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Bob. Good evening to you.
How are you?
Okay, great, great. We're in our final week and ready to give it our all, as we have been. Even though we're not going to be on the final debate tomorrow night, they still continue to have the two candidates that represent the minority opinion, and they continue to exclude the candidates that represent the majority of opinion. I mean, my anti-war position is held by approximately 70% of the people in the state. But the newspapers and the media, I guess, if they really cared about Florida, they would have invited me. But they obviously care about something else, whether it be incumbency or corporate dominance or corporate money or whatever. I'm not sure.
Well, I guess there's a possibility that they don't. They're not inviting you because if they feel like if they invite you, they have to invite the weirdo who's the strange candidate who's running on a vanity platform of the fair tax or some other niche candidacy. Yours is not a niche candidacy, Brian. Yours is a legitimate candidacy. And the fact that the media down there can't tell the difference between the two tells me a lot about the quality of people running that media.
Well, they set up this false standard. You know, they say that you have to have 7 to 9% recording in the polls, but then they don't mention your name for the entire 6 or 8 months prior to that as a legitimate candidate. So it's almost like they want to reinforce the idea or want to control who is determined credible or viable. And as the editorial writer of the Palm Beach Post said to me, you're not viable because you don't have a lot of money, you don't have the support of the two major parties, and you're not well known statewide, despite the fact that you're legitimate, you're qualified, you registered, you went through all the proper procedures. So it's a rather aristocratic type of attitude in this state. And I wasn't prepared for this. I've been around the block a while, but I don't think I've ever seen it like this.
Well, this is what happens when political process becomes royal process, I think, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that somehow you shouldn't be allowed to, my God, every one of those Floridians who holds that 70% view has an absolute right in my eyes, including you, to look Bill Nelson squarely in the eye and Catherine Harris and say, why are you opposed to what we hold to be a critical issue, the end of the war in Iraq? Why is that?
Exactly.
Explain it to us. We're voters. We're franchised. We have, you know, we have suffrage. Explain it.
Yeah, but you see, they don't have to ask that question if they don't put me in the debate, okay? Or if they don't include me in the voter guide profile, which they have not included. You know, so they can turn a blind eye to legitimacy or because it makes them feel uncomfortable. You know, it's amazing. I mean, doesn't the press, don't they, you know, identify themselves as seeking the truth and, you know, conducting all these investigative reports on people of wrongdoing? And then when it comes to principle, they don't stand up for principle. They're just part of the status quo or the establishment. They don't want to see truth in the eye. They don't want to face it.
Well, what throws me, Brian, is I read an article today about the Catherine Harris campaign.
Oh, really?
And this woman has gone almost certifiably insane.
Right.
And yet somehow she's still treated as legitimate. Frankly, and I'm not trying to be insulting, more legitimate than your candidacy. And frankly, you're talking about issues. She's running around talking about, dear God, how you know, they're out. You know, she is now actively complaining that the reason she's having trouble in her campaign, Brian, is because there is a vast left and right wing conspiracy against her. I kid you not.
Really, I didn't hear that yet.
Yeah, I mean, she's crazier than a run over dog at this point.
Yeah, but she's got $12 million, and Bill Nelson has $18 million. And I've got $20,000, so, you know, priorities, no matter how wacky she may sound, and also the Republican Party is part of the establishment. It's the status quo. It's what the way things have always been. You know, you can't rock the boat. I mean, my God, you know, don't dare threaten what's acceptable in our society.
So what we're saying now, basically, is that money has bought Catherine Harris respectability.
Right.
Which just makes me just, you know.
And also permanent incumbency has bought her respectability.
But she's done now. I mean, that's an empty House seat that she's in now.
Yeah, but she's a congresswoman now. I mean, for the time being, okay? And Bill Nelson is an incumbent senator. And they're both multimillionaires. They're part of the 40 to 50% of the Senate that are their millionaires in our elected Senate House. So you know, the concept that anybody can be president of the United States is no longer valid. You know, you can only be president if you're a millionaire, or if you sell your soul to corporate dominance or interest groups. I mean, And the Fourth Estate goes along with it.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I get comfort in the fact that my position, and it's ironic. I mean, I'm a minority party candidate. I'm an independent, and usually we represent minority ideas that the majority parties embrace down the road and then take to be their own. But at this stage of the game, I represent the majority of opinion. You know, I'm opposed to the war. I want a national health plan for all Americans, and the majority of Americans want this. But you don't rock the boat. I mean, you don't. It's people's jobs are at stake here, I guess. I don't know. What is it? You know, you don't want to take a risk. You don't want to gamble now. I mean, be careful.
Well, and I suppose there's a lot of truth in that, Brian. But, you know, I would feel sick walking into the voting booth on November 7th in Florida. I mean, there's a lot of good to be done. There's a wonderful lady named Sam Simpson running for Congress down there.
Right.
Clint Curtis is running for Congress down there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good people. And if I was in those districts, I could feel a little bit good about walking into the booth. But the Senate race, you know, there's an old saying where I come from in Alabama that they generally say, you know, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the, and then they throw in whoever the two candidates are. Well, truly, except for the sanity issue, there's not a dime's worth of difference right now between Bill Nelson and Catherine Harris. Because they are both going to vote to continue feeding American human beings into a meat grinder in the sand.
Well, this is my point too, Bob, and I appreciate you making the point, because it does undercut, you know, I think a party that you've supported all along. You know, the Democrats were in power in 2002 when the war resolution was passed. They had the majority in the Senate. And for Floridians to hold their nose, who are Democrats, and vote for Bill Nelson because they want the Democrats to retake the majority of the Senate, they're compromising their principles, and they're selling out to something that won't happen. It's twiddledy and twiddledum. It does not matter whether Bill Nelson or Catherine Harris is elected. That's how bad it is. He voted for the war. He voted for the Patriot Act. He voted for the bankruptcy bill. He voted for the estate tax. He voted to give tax breaks for the rich. He voted to. He didn't support the minimum wage increase. He voted with the Republicans to keep the tube connected to Terri Schiavo, to allow the state government to intervene on in a private situation. I mean, on and on and on. I mean, where does it? The guy has decided that he has to. He's so proud to be middle of the road. He's so proud to be able to work with Republicans that he is spineless. That he is, you know, he's got no guts and gumption and no leadership. And yet, you know, the establishment, over 30 newspapers have endorsed him, and I don't think there's a one that's endorsed Catherine Harris. And they justify it, on some neutral things like, well, he favors the environment, I don't know. So just some cheap little superficial stuff.
Well, and Brian, when do Floridians think that this tiger is going to change his stripes? Where was he on the Alito vote?
Right. And where was he? You know, Alberto Gonzalez. He embraced Alberto Gonzalez and Alito. You know, but, you know, the Democrats voted for Thomas and Scalia. So, you know, who are we kidding here? You know,
I want to fix my party, Brian.
But it
appears to be broken there.
Well, it's dead. It's not broken. It is dead. I'm going to make a prediction here. I think that the Democrats will not make it. They will not achieve the majority in this election. They're not organized, and they're not. They don't stand for what they believe in. They don't stand up for it. They compromise for power's sake. They pander to the corporate America just like the Republicans do. They both take corporate money. So when you have people taking corporate money, they you know, who suffers?
Well, I did. I saw a report earlier today. Granted, it was on CNN, so it's suspect. But it pointed out that, you know, very quietly, corporate America, in anticipation that there might be a Democratic takeover of the House, possibly the Senate, have started putting a little bit more money into Democratic coffers because they want to make sure that they're right.
Right.
Yeah, they're right with God, so to speak, or they're at the foot of the cross with whoever happens to maintain control. That is a cynical kind of politics that I find disheartening and I find to be an absolute betrayal.
Right.
Of our American principles.
Yeah, right. But, you know, why doesn't it bother people? I have learned something in this election. I started off being very critical of the two-party system, and I still am. But, you know, I really think that the press and the media, the Fourth Estate, is really the power broker here. And they're the guys that have caved in. They give in. I mean, it's the New York Times and the Washington Post and the L.A. Times. You know, they've been pushing this war ever since it started.
Good for business.
Yeah, right. You know, what is wrong with them? You know, they're gutless. They are gutless.
Brian, one of the things that I remember that it just sticks in my memory, it's just burned in there like a George Bush brand on a Deke pledge.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the war, when the troops were going toward Baghdad, I forget who the correspondent was with CNN, but they had him on a camera phone, and it was 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And I was just riveted in horror to the television set watching this nightmare unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the guy say the words, "Well," and whatever the anchor's name was, "Well, Bill, I've got to tell you, this is some of the best fun I've ever had." And that it stopped me in my tracks, Brian, because I thought, my Lord, he is in a vehicle that is racing its way toward Baghdad in anticipation of the slaughter of other human beings. And he thinks it's good fun.
Right.
This guy should never, ever, ever be allowed to have a microphone in his hands and report anything approaching the news. Maybe he can cover Paris Hilton, but he should not ever do the news again.
Well, didn't Patton say something like that, too, in World War II, or he was supposed to have said
What was it? It's a good thing war is so awful, lest we would love it too much.
Something like that.
Yeah, along those lines. But you're right. You're right about the media. It is. And having worked in the media, the real live, honest to God media, I can say with certainty that it is the media that has taught politicians that they cannot speak for more than 15 seconds at a chunk, or it will not make it to the news.
Right. Right.
You know, the media invented the 15-second soundbite. The Republicans and the Democrats didn't.
That's right. That's right. You know, Bob, I don't know if you've mentioned to your audience or not about your contribution to our campaign, in the sense of you've done a 60-second radio spot for us.
I haven't made mention of that simply because we've been so up to our eyeballs. But yeah, I was proud to do it, Brian. Just put together a 60-second spot. I wish you had the ability to flood the airwaves with it down there.
Well, we're starting. We're going to hit the airwaves tomorrow, and we're going to go to all 55 stations across the state. Every piece of territory in the state will be covered, and the message is, of course, that you know that Bill Nelson supported this war, and he embraced the Bush invasion, and he's supported ever since, every year, and he doesn't want to quote cut and run. So this is your great Democrat that still plays it safe, and even when he knows that it doesn't represent the majority opinion of the general public, he continues to go in that direction.
Well, see, this is this is politics that is motivated by fear, isn't it, Brian? Because if Bill Nelson was to come out and do the moral thing, the right thing, the upright thing, the decent thing, and say, look, the war is wrong, it is time to end the war.
Yeah.
Then he knows that somewhere in some dank and fetid and cobwebbed up corner of the basement of the White House, Karl Rove is working would immediately go into overdrive to call Bill Nelson a big old tan sissy. and that he was a soft on terrorism, and I mean, you know the litany. And where the problem arises is it is actually hard work for a politician to stand, and it takes incredible character to stand up to that kind of political thuggery. And it's a level of backbone that a lot of politicians don't have.
Well, I mean, it's self-interest. I mean, the politicians know where they get their money. They get it from, you know, he gets big money from the defense contractors. You know, they have a self-interest in perpetuating this war and in the investment in this war. He gets big money from the space industry and agriculture. And so, I mean, he can't afford to go against them, despite the fact that, the majority of Americans don't agree with his position. But the money, he realizes that the money buys media time. And then he can convince people through his propaganda that he's the better candidate. So that's where it all stems from. I mean, that's my beef with the Democrats. You know, they don't adhere to the principles. They don't adhere to taking the high road. You know, whatever happened to ethics and morality and the law of the land? You know, it's dog eat dog, and it's power. It's whoever can get power, and the rest be damned. And so, I had to go to Cuba last week in order to be given my right to express my freedom of expression. I mean, I don't know if you realize that or not, Bob. I mean, I traveled to Cuba for 4 days.
I read about it, yeah.
And when they had their first debate, and I was denied it, so I went to Cuba and had a press conference and declared my opposition to the Cuban embargo, and the international press reported it. But the Florida press doesn't report on me. There's a total blackout here, the irony, the absolute irony that I had to go to a communist country where the freedom of expression is supposedly suppressed. And I was given my right of freedom of expression. And then I was able to not only say that I opposed the Cuban embargo, but it was reported in throughout Europe and Asia and South America. And it ultimately came back to a few publications in North America. But my God, what a commentary. And then I come back to the United States and the customs officials rough me up. You know, because I'm an American that went to, I legitimately went to Cuba with proper papers, but they still had to give me a rough go. I don't know if it was because of my political position or just the embargo. But what a silly, stupid policy. At 46 years of this stupidity of putting a nation in poverty, and you know, as soon as Fidel Castro dies, we're going to drop the damn embargo. I mean, it's just absolute horrible pride on the part of our country. I mean, it's shameless. It is absolutely shameless the way we are conducting ourselves in this foreign policy, giving them favored treatment to come here as immigrants. You know, not treating all immigrants equally, but giving them favored treatment because they're Cubans, because a small group of conservative Republicans or conservative Cubans have given enough money to the governor and the legislature, and then they throw up this fear and intimidation of communism.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. So.
You know, how foolish is it going to be when the embargo finally ends? You know, it has served no purpose. The rest of the world didn't get a lot. You know, at some point, you look up and go, "Okay, this failed." But the fact of the matter is there is a huge and very, very handy Republican voter base in South Florida now.
Well, but so what? I mean, it's wrong, you know. I mean, they don't give people their democratic rights. Entertainers come there, and if they're not anti-Castro, they chase them out of town. They tar and feather them. I mean, this is America. This is not a fascist country. You know, but no, the politicians tolerate it because of big money. And, I'm angry. I'm an angry independent candidate that I have rights here as an American, as a citizen, and I'm being denied my constitutional rights and being treated equitable. And for us to tolerate this crap, and for the two political parties to tolerate it, and to be beholden to the big money, is unacceptable. And I will continue to speak out against it, and I think other Americans, because if we don't do it, and if we don't change this system, it's going to change itself, and it's going to be very detrimental to our society.
Well, there's a great deal of truth in what you say, Brian. Money is so addictive. I mean, it is absolutely political heroin. Okay.
And money and power.
Yeah.
Power.
Well, yeah. The money to buy the power and the money to keep the power.
Right. Right.
That's why it's so hard to move these clean elections bills through various state legislatures and through God knows the Congress itself. You know, the idea that I think it's the right way to do it. We are Americans. We participate in the political process. You can't get half of the United States to even get up off their asses and go vote. The least they can do is when they pay their taxes, mm-hmm. a portion of those tax dollars go to the public funding of political campaigns so that they are participating in the process whether they like it or not.
But, Bob, you know, half the country doesn't vote because they know it doesn't make a difference. They know that no matter how they vote, the politicians go the way of the money. And that's why they don't vote. I think they have a legitimate reason not to vote. I do not bemoan or condemn them for their act of defiance. It's not a question of being civic minded. I mean, they're being civic minded by staying away from the polls when they know it's contrived and,
well, see,
and manipulated.
I got an issue with you on that, Brian, because I think some of it's just abject plain up out and out laziness.
Well, I mean, okay, look at small groups have affect change in our society. So I'm never bothered when I go to a meeting and there's a small group of people. You know, you never can get a large group of people. People are busy and distracted and
Go to a county commission meeting, Brian?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the only people sitting in there is the county commission and the guy from the local paper and maybe the radio guy.
Right, right, okay.
You know, and 9 times out of 10, the county commission or the board of education or whatever local group you want to talk about has scheduled that at a time that makes it virtually impossible for the electorate to attend and actually call these people to account.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you know, so what? I mean, so we know that, and that's in a way, we know that we can affect change with a small group of people. I mean, you know, Hitler did it, and the American Revolution happened with a small group of people.
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
sure.
And so that's reality, and so, you know, that's why it's important if we do get involved, and that's why I'm involved, and that's why, I'm a long-shot, dark horse, you know, candidate with little money, so why in the hell does this guy think he can get anywhere? You know, I force the press and the media to say they have to say no to me.
Well, see,
they have to make a decision.
Well, yeah, and sadly to say, they have made that decision.
Well, then they got to live with it.
Right.
Make them live with it.
But Brian, the next thing we find out, you know, you said something earlier about how independent candidates usually have a position that's not held by the majority, and it's eventually co-opted over a period of time.
Right.
If I hope this happens. If you can poll enough people on Tuesday, November the 7th, there is at least a happy consequence that maybe, just maybe,
mm-hmm.
Bill Nelson will figure out that he is wrong.
Yeah, well, we hope so.
Because
he gets the message.
Because the one thing, and I don't think you'll disagree with me on this, mm-hmm. the one thing that is most important out of all of this is not Brian Moore's political future or political career or Bob Kincaid's ideas or any of that. The most important thing is to make sure that not another single solitary human being dies in Iraq for this god-awful, bloodthirsty blunder.
That's the sad part, right? That is the tragedy.
That's what matters.
We can argue and bitch and all that other stuff, but what, you know, the bottom line is these poor kids are dying.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you. I mean, that, you know, you can...
We've got to make it end.
We can have our intellectual debates, but you know the bottom line is this.
And
well,
regardless, and frankly, if I understand your character as I think that I do, Brian, November 7th is not going to end this issue for you. You're
well,
going
to right.
You're
you know,
going to be
been
somewhere
involved before and after. So, and we'll continue. But it's the war, the war, the war. That is it. It is the war. And can you imagine that the press and the media have not allowed a candidate to participate in a debate to address that issue?
That is criminal.
Isn't that incredible?
I mean, this because most of these outfits operate on outside of the realm of cable.
Right. I mean, it's
they operate on the public.
Choice.
They operate on the public airwaves. They are repositories of a public trust.
Mm-hmm.
At least under the original vision of broadcast media in this nation, and they are giving up that trust. They are betraying that trust in refusing to allow, for instance, an anti-war point of view to be injected into the discussion over the plebiscite that's going to determine the leadership of your state and a membership in the United States Senate.
Right, I agree, Bob. I agree. That's right.
So, you know, I hope you'll get some chance along the way, and I know you're not giving up. You know, a guy who asked a simple question of George Allen got tackled and assaulted by his people today.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not advocating that you do anything, but somewhere along the way, if they're not going to let you debate, if they're not going to let you on the media, if they're not going to pay attention to you in the press, somewhere along the way. It's incumbent upon you, not necessarily because of your political ambitions, but because of the passion that you bring to this determination that this filthy war must end, that you inject yourself into the process, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does.
You know, if Bill Nelson shows up at a Rotary luncheon, you should find a way to be sitting there eating the rubber chicken right next to him.
Okay, Bob.
All right, Brian, so good to talk to you.
Well, likewise, and thank you very much for your terrific service to the country.
Well, thank you.
You are a profile in courage.
thank you. I will take that in humility, and I will take that in great honor from you.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Brian Moore, independent Senate candidate in Florida. Agnes says we take a break. We'll come back and take your calls at 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be.
Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Song where they start yodeling at some point. Okay. 20 minutes before the hour, and we go straight to our good friend Albert in Wisconsin. Albert, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm getting along, I reckon.
Oh, I'm pumped up. Did you see the way those right-wing thugs beat up that guy?
Oh, yeah. The Alan Brown shirts. Jesus.
Tell you, those guys are lucky it wasn't me. Yeah, I know people talk tough, but I wouldn't tolerate nothing like that.
Well, that was Mike Stark, and I don't think Mike really expected any of that. They caught him flat-footed.
Well, yeah, true. You know, you'd think in America you could ask some questions without getting beat up, but well, you know, the race is close, and they're getting all excited, so they have to, you know, resort to what they always resort to, just like that guy who wrote the letter to Stephanie Miller the other day.
Oh, my God. I didn't get to that last night. That was disgusting.
Now, I hope he wants to stick AK-47s up their glory holes and
Jeez. Send
them to heaven or wherever they're at.
Yeah, so far the right wing doesn't know I exist yet, so I haven't had to put up with that kind of crap.
Don't worry. We got you back, just in case.
No, I'm heavily armed.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it just gets crazier and crazier. For a while there, I'd say at the end of this weekend and last week, I kind of thought that the media was sort of making a turn to start confronting the right wingers on their BS. I mean, if you saw Face the Nation a few times and a couple of these other shows, you actually saw the left wing, I guess you could say, or the media. I shouldn't say left wing. The media actually starting confronting, like, the head of the Melman, Ken Melman, and his little weaselly mouth sitting there.
Yeah, chinless Ken.
What a swine. Oh, I have no authority. We should change the law so I can... What is this? I mean, you know...
The guy that produced the damned ad was one of Karl Rove's protégés. Oh, I have no idea who did that. Yeah, look, they're at this point, they're pathological liars. They just they get it in front of the camera and they start lying. I mean, if you had a polygraph on Ken Melman when he was talking with Bob Schieffer the other day, it would have looked like an earthquake was happening from the with the needles.
What we got to do is we got to figure out how to generate power off these people's lies.
God, we'd be energy independent tomorrow, wouldn't we?
Immediately, blink. That'd be a sight. But yeah, you know, I do have to take issue with something you said with your last guest.
Okay,
I'm kind of upset with you about saying it. I mean, you said that the Iraq War is a blunder. It's not a blunder. This is a carefully contrived plan. Everything is going according to plan.
Well, no. See, I take issue with you. If you go back and you read all the planning for this, this is not according to plan.
It's not according to what they tried to sell to the people. But I would think, I mean, if you really look at it, it is according to plan. Because, you know, they've wanted since day one. And they knew, anyone with half a brain cell knew that, you know, going into this country, disbanding the military, taking the oil, letting the national treasures get raped and robbed, and then enforcing these, you know, midnight raids on people's houses. You know, these kinds of things are all they're going to do is start to fuel the insurgency. I mean, we did nothing for a year. I mean, to this day, we're still not at pre-sanction level. And that is just the fact that blows my mind, that we are not even giving the same amount of power, clean water,
all this stuff.
You know, and you always hear the right wing say, they never tell the good stories in Iraq, that we're painting schools. Who cares if painting schools? The school doesn't even have electricity.
We laid down a soccer field last week. Now it has mines.
Yeah, now there's cluster bombs everywhere. Well, we don't use cluster, but we don't use white phosphorus. I mean, these kinds of things, I mean, we wanted an insurgency there because we want a valid reason to stay there. We have to stay in Iraq. If we don't stay in Iraq, we're going to lose control. I mean, you know, we could sit there. I mean, what happens when all these...
I don't differ with you. We wanted to stay there.
Oh, yeah.
But we would like... We had plans for it to... I mean, it wasn't some part of some great, Tolstoy-esque or Chekhov-esque staging when the dear leader showed up on the aircraft carrier and said major combat operations were over. He really meant that. That they really thought that.
You believe that?
I believe they believed it. There are too many people who were not associated with the administration who have come out and said, you know, we tried to warn them about the insurgency and they kept telling us we were crazy.
Yeah,
they wanted a peaceful, stable Iraq because you got to remember Paul Wolfowitz was out there. You know, I mean, there was just blood dripping off of his fangs when he said that, you know, the war would pay for itself with their oil. This was all about opening up that Iraqi oil market and controlling the flow of the oil that was coming out of Iraq and going to go to India and China.
You see, I think it's more about, I do believe you, you know, I'll give you that it's to control the oil, but I think it's more in terms to control it from being released into the market. I mean,
it's not about sending it to us, it's about having a hand on the spigot.
Yes. Yes, and I do think it's to restrict. I mean, I do think they want to restrict it. They want prices where they are. I mean, if you look at it, oil prices and what it's doing, yeah, while it does damage to us little people, they don't care about us little people.
Oh, hell no.
But what it does is it makes the stock market raise up, and it makes, you know, the dividends and profits go sky high because, you know, they're sitting here. They don't have to turn around and, you know, answer to the little people because they're the ones that are the rich, and they sell the, you know, the little people that want to be rich. They call themselves Republican, and then they make up these nonsense. Like, just for example, I mean, I only have it on maybe 25 seconds a day, but NPR was on, and they were talking about how all of a sudden now they're going to put these amnesty programs. I mean, this is stuff we're talking about now. I don't get it. It just blows my mind. We're talking about making 20 to 29-year-olds take, like, abstinence pledges? They're wasting...
Oh, yeah, I got that sitting in front of me right now. Abstinence message goes beyond teens. Now the government's targeting unmarried adults who up to age 29 as part of its abstinence-only programs.
How are they going to do this? I mean, how can you possibly... I mean, they don't have... 20 to 29, you are not stuck in...
Well, no. They don't give a damn about whether people up to 29 have sex or not. This is another case of getting the front feet in the trough, because there are lots of faith-based organizations out there that can get money from the federal government to tell people in their congregations to stop doing it, unless they're married.
Yeah, they're for small government, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. If it got any smaller, we couldn't find it with a microscope.
Stay out of my life. I mean, you know, you can say whatever you want about, you know, the evil liberals that...
Well, look it. I mean, I said that I felt kind of creepy talking about Bob Corker's kids, okay? Or kid, Julia, there, you know, doing the tongue wrestling with the other girl in the photograph. I don't know if you saw it or not. But the fact of the matter is, this guy can't even impose his conservative Christian family values on his own daggum daughter.
Well, of course not. I mean, of course not. It doesn't work like that. You can't say, I mean, you know, it works, you know, they were talking about these schools, the faith-based schools, and how, you know, they perform better, okay? They perform better because they have the screening process, where they don't have to deal with the, you know, the mass population. They can only deal with these select few kids that, you know, whose parents can afford to pay. And, you know, they also, you know, they have the whole thing of hell,
held over their heads, which is a powerful tool that to manipulate people.
Yeah.
You know, but that stuff only works so far. You know, it only works so far. I mean, you can only fool yourself that you're not gay because Jesus converted you for so long until you're writing emails to 16-year-old pages and, you know, having Jeff Gannon come over for, you know, midnight White House visits. This stuff only works, you know, I guess surfacely to, you know, I just watched a really good movie on Spin this last night. Thank you for smoking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting there watching that last night, and I turned on the radio today, and then here it is again. You know, they're talking about, you know, oh, we got to, except it's not smoking now. Now it's sex. And now it's just having kids out of wedlock. I mean, these are the code words that they have that are just, you know, they talk about family values my foot. Family values my foot. And we're wasting $310 billion or $337 billion on Iraq. I mean, you look at that when we're facing the problems with we're facing with in this world. You know, we definitely need Dennis Kucinich as president in 08. I mean, he's my favorite. He's my front runner, and that's my fantasy. And you can call me whatever.
No. We worked for Dennis in the 04 election. So no. You're not.
But he's where we need to go. We need an office of peace.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, that legislation is currently languishing in the Congress.
Yeah, we need people that make sense. We need to fund the space program. Just for the species. We need to fund the space program.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because a lot of times with liberals and progressives, they're like, you know, we got hungry people. We can't be working on the space program. That's hooey. We've got to have a viable space program. If we'd stayed on the track that, yeah, I know, old Nazi, all of that, that Wernher von Braun set out, do you realize he had us pegged for Mars in 1980?
Yeah.
I mean, that was part of the plan. And Nixon scrapped and scaled back the Apollo program.
Well, yeah, we had to.
Or 1990, maybe it was. We wound up on Mars, and that, but you know, these things have consequences. When you screw up, governmental screw ups aren't just for today or tomorrow. They're long term screw ups. I've got a Agnes brought me home a book. It's a 1960 book of editorial cartoons by Herb Bloch. You're familiar with Herb Bloch, right? He was the dean of editorial cartoonists for a while.
Mm-hmm.
1960. Campaign issues. And you know what? We're still talking about the same issues. And the players are still the same.
Yeah.
It's questions of, he's got cartoons of, the AMA. It was great. He did the AMA as like a great big, primitive jungle war shield, sort of, God icon, and it says AMA on it, and it's healthcare for the elderly would be socialized medicine. You know, this is back. Yeah, this is back when they were fighting, when the Republicans were fighting Medicare for the love of God. And it just really, really opened my eyes. I think I may do an entire show on this book, Albert, because nothing has changed, and the players are the same.
That's
the same tired, sickening Republican, the psychobabble garbage about why we can't treat the American people like decent human beings. And it's 46 years ago.
Yeah.
And it hasn't changed a dime's worth.
And I mean, some of the issues haven't changed in hundreds of years. I mean, it's sad that we are, you know, we think we're it's like what Bill Maher said the other day. New rules. How we're number one. We're number one. No, we're not number one anymore.
No.
You talk about liberals hate America. Liberals don't hate America. We want to be number one. We want to be number one in child, you know, infant mortality. We want to be number one in education. We want to be number one in life expectancy. We want to be number one in helping feed the poor. I mean, we want to be number one in, you know, all the best things that there are in technology and education. I mean, and it's not us that. You know, we sit here, turn around, and then when we complain about these completely failed and utterly ridiculously stupid policies of these right-wing idiots.
But see, we're not, but Albert, we're not like the other side. You're right. We do want to be number one in these things. We want these things. These things matter to us. And unlike the other side, we are willing to sacrifice. We are willing to put our own time and energies into it. We are willing to do whatever is necessary to make it possible. The other side just uses this crap every 2 to 4 years as election jingoism, and then goes on about its business.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what happens when these tax cuts come to bite us in the rear.
Yeah, about 2010, somewhere between 2010 and 2012.
I thought it was 2008.
I always read 10 and 12, but you know, two years.
Yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, it's not going to be fun to see, because when this stuff comes to fruition, Albert, there is going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and at that point in time, little children will spit on the ground at the mention of George Bush's name, and you will not be able in 2008 or 10 or 12 or whenever it is it actually happens, you will not be able to find a Bush voter.
Well, I hated him.
Oh, he's terrible. I never voted for him. Why would I do that?
That's typical.
Albert, good, great conversation. Thank you very kindly. I look forward to hearing from you soon.
Hey.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that's it? Okay, Agnes says that's it. Well, I got 6 minutes.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Steady still there?
Oh, yes, sorry.
Hey, Steady, you still there?
I'm still here.
Cool, good to hear from you.
Hey, I know you're running close up to the top of the hour, but I just wanted to give everyone an update. I pulled a little flag campaigning stunt. Long story short, a half mile of fence line along the freeway, and I put like 600 flags up, and it got some attention. Monday morning, one of the flags made it into the Ventura Star, and I got a call from one of the reporters and did an interview this morning, and I went up. She had told me that the flags had been captured by Caltrans. And that they were at the Pleasant Valley Yard, so I immediately said I got to go get them, and they were willing to return them. And when I got there today, I think they were like 500 flags, 8x12 flags in a big orange bag. It looked like a big pumpkin on Halloween, man. It was.
Hey, man. They know how to reverence the flag, don't they?
Yeah, there were 500 stuffed in there, but much to their credit, they didn't throw them away, and they were keeping them because they recognized the effort that had gone into. You know, I take my business card to the staff and put them up there. But so when I got home, there was a radio station that had called and seen the flags, and I did a radio station interview just before I called you.
Great.
And then as soon as I got off with that, I wanted to get on the horn and let you know.
I'll tell you, we're proud of the effort you're making, Steady. We honest to God are.
A little bit of coverage here, a little bit of coverage there. I'm still in this and running it like we're going to win, like we can win. I have that spirit when I talk to people, and that's how I'm going through the next 7 days.
I think that's the way you have to, Steady.
We're going
to
win.
Absolutely. Take care. Got to roll.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
All right, 4 minutes before the hour, now it is time to go. The show tonight, this Halloween edition, was produced by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor, engineered by John Fox. That's not a fox, that's a wolf.
Oh, my God.
Okay, well, anyway, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the podcasts, and the archives of all the programs on the Horn. When it comes to making little bits, bites, and other various and sundry molecules go where they're supposed to, there's no one better than Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. We have wonderful mods in an absolutely insane chat room tonight. And we have a couple of great news ninjas who maintain the postings on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com news blog. All of this, of course, happens because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream. And in supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
She's loving that sensation at 25 years. show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, I almost got caught off guard here. We're chatting away with people on a couple of different chat rooms, and my goodness, look up at the clock, and whoo, time to go. Hey, how are all of you? Having a good week so far? I sure am, and I hope you